This is your Commander-in-Chief. I am issuing a warning. The following podcast contains adult content and intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. I'm here with Frank Trigg. Twinkle Toes. It's Monday. We're doing a show Monday today because I'm going to Reno tomorrow through Sunday. I'm going to miss the UFC 184, which sucks. It's in LA, and I would have liked to have gone. And Invictus this week as well. I just got back from Detroit. That was I had a good time in Detroit, although it was crazy. I did one show where there was like 20 people in the crowd. Half were Asian from Japan, spoke no English, which is always. I had to explain to them why the joke was funny. I mean, literally break down. I would tell a joke, people would laugh, and then I would explain to the Asian people why it was funny, and then that would get even bigger laugh than the actual joke. So
you have to be exhausted because that takes so much energy to explain a joke, and your jokes aren't that highbrow. Like you don't really think about them. So yeah. You're like, dude, why? You know, Carlton's in the middle of this crowd. And you're like, why is he Carlton? Well, because he has a sweater on.
Oh, exactly.
And he's black, and he looks like Carlton from the Fresh Prince of Bel. Okay, got it. Okay, great. It's exhausting. Like, how are you even here right now?
Then the next night, the Saturday night early show was there was 10 people who were they were Latin, and they had like, you know, tattoos on their necks. The guys did, and they had these girls with them, and they were just there for trouble. Like the host goes on, they were like, "Get off the stage, you suck," to the host. Then this girl came on, and she's like, "So I'm single." I'm like, "Well, we know why." Just being dicks.
Oh, those guys, yeah.
So then I go on stage, and the guy starts videotaping me, which I hate people with their camera phone, because you say the wrong thing, it goes on YouTube, and your career could be over, depending on how out of context what you say, or
yeah.
Maybe you make a racial joke, but it's like a joke, and it doesn't sound, you know what I'm saying? You never know what, if I'm riffing off the cuff. So I tell the guy to put your CD off. I mean, put your phone off. And so the guy makes a face at me like, pff, pff. And then I start going on more. And then first I try being nice. Like I was like, "Sir, look, I'm not going to mess with a guy with a neck tattoo, yada, yada." But then they just kept talking and talking. So then I tried talking over them, but they were making everyone uncomfortable. And I'm like, "Look, guys, everyone paid a lot of money for the show," which isn't even that true. But I'm like, people paid their hard-earned money.
Yeah.
Can you please? And then the guy's like, "Well, you ain't funny." I go to the crowd. "Who here thinks I'm funny?" The whole crowd's like, "Wah!" I'm like, "All right, you've been rounded off." And then the guy gets up and he's like, just starts cursing at me, right? So I'm like, this is why I'm pro-choice. And then it just became this whole thing. Then the bouncers had to come. A fight almost broke out. Then they got kicked out. Then the two girls that were there started throwing punches at each other. The girls in the party started fighting in the parking lot. I got it on tape. I might actually put it on YouTube. But it was entertaining.
Hold on, let me get this straight. So you hate being videotaped because it might end up on YouTube, but you're going to videotape somebody and put them on YouTube?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I love the irony.
But then I got back, and I was actually, it was funny because after the show, people were like, "Man, those Mexicans were making us real Mexicans look bad." You know, they were saying.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was this black girl laughing, and I was like, to her boyfriend, I'm like, she was actually crying, laughing. And I'm like, "See, I'm making your girlfriend wet right now." It was actually I liked Detroit. I had a good time there. But man, it was like 8 Mile a little bit of me versus the crowd. But it was fun. That was cool. And I got back. How was your week? What happened?
You didn't throw up your mom's spaghetti?
No.
You didn't? Okay. Let's see how many people pick up that reference.
Yeah. How was your
weekend? Was good. It was good. But I want to back up for a second. You have to leave for Reno tomorrow, which is why we're taping today on Monday.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with why you can't be here Friday or Saturday for the event.
No, I'm tomorrow through Sunday. I'm there.
Oh, through Sunday,
yeah,
you're in
yeah,
Reno.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I'm in Reno all week. And I booked it like a year ago. And it would have been a great week to be in town because Invictus is on Friday. Yeah. I would have went to that. I would have went to the fights on Saturday. I had tickets. Ronda Rousey's mom invited me to come with her to be part of Team Rousey. But I feel like every time I go to root for someone in person, they lose. So I feel like I'm bad luck in person.
Well, you know what you can do is that you can tell Ronda's mom that she can get some downgraded tickets and let me have them because I don't have tickets yet. I'm going to be
really?
Here. I don't have any tickets. I don't have tickets to Invicta. I don't have tickets to UFC. I got nothing.
The UFC doesn't – by the way, Greg Wilson just showed up. The UFC doesn't give you tickets?
No. Nope.
That's crazy.
Nope, See, I very rarely ask. I reached out probably today or – Did I reach out this morning or last night? One of the days I reached out for a set of tickets, and I won't know till Friday if there's any left over. Like, I might not get
it. I don't think it'll be sold out, though. Staples Center is not that – I mean, it's big, the Staples Center, but I feel like when Weidman and Belfort left the card, a lot of interest waned.
Well, the bomb with California, too, in L.A., it's difficult to get to L.A. It's difficult to get there. So, like, people are going to fly in from Manitoba to come into L.A. And then once you land in LAX – you're not right by Staples Center. It takes a while to get up here. So you got to get down to Staples Center, get downtown. Then where are you going to stay? It's very expensive. How are you going to get around? It's very expensive. So it's a difficult place. It's really for people that are local. So if you're coming in from San Diego, people drive up from San Diego. People come down from Central Coast.
Yeah.
People come in from Vegas because it's close. But other than that, there's not that many people going to come through. So
do you think it's like Vegas, people are more apt to just...
I'm sorry. I'm not allowed to talk to you. I got too many potato famine people. I have to... Like, I had some guy, he literally berated me via private message for like...
You?
But yeah, he was going after me for like 4 days to the point I was like, Jill, can you read this? Can you see this?
Really?
And I kept egging him on, going back and forth and fighting.
Oh, that way.
And you're right. What are you talking about?
Six today.
What are you talking about? What are you doing? Like, what's happening? And whatever. I kept like going back at him. I finally was like, hey, you do realize that all that shit you yelling at me for, I didn't even say. So how about the next time you pick on somebody, you actually have your facts straight and go back and listen to the podcast. So what you did is your mom's boyfriend who beat you in the basement of your house.
Whoa, boy.
Said, this is what happened, and you associate it with me not really knowing who said it. Right. So if you're mad at somebody, be mad at somebody. I go, but just so you know, I am racist. I hate everybody equally.
And if you're confused right now, we're talking about the podcast 2 weeks ago where Greg Wilson was making potato jokes about Conor McGregor, which then led to us being a big riot in Ireland.
Which is funny.
It was one potato joke. The rest were like crowns, gold doubloons, and I think a Lucky Charms reference.
I actually talked to...
They were just jokes. They're just jokes.
I interviewed Brent Johns, who's a fan of the show. He's fighting in Titan here in a couple weeks, and he's from Wales, and he's a Welshman. And I said, "What's it? You know, do you like get offended when people pick on?" He goes, "Well, no, everyone picks on Wales. Like, It's not. Why is anybody mad at you for picking on Ireland? Like, come on, it's not that big. They're still like, if Ireland's getting picked on, they get so. Hey, at least we're not Welsh. It's like even he's cracking the joke. So it's like it's a non-issue to people that really understand the humor of it, but." People that just don't get your humor, I guess we're all irritated.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
So I thought it was funny.
So your week, how was the rest of
it? It was good. So at the what did I do this weekend? I had my son on Friday got Distinguished Dragon Distinguished Dragon, which is a award. Goes to Montessori school. Their mascot's the dragons.
Okay.
Every teacher is allowed to give two awards out for the year for people that follow the six pillars of community. So it's a pretty big thing to get, but he's in kindergarten. So
you're raising a classy kid.
Yeah.
I met
his son. His son, who's like, in his 20s.
21.
Looks just like him.
Yeah.
Could not be a nicer guy. I mean, you talk about he looks just like Frank. Yeah. And he was, without all the baggage.
Right.
It was
my kid's going to be like.
Great kid. Yeah. So that was Friday. And then Saturday, I was here. I came, he had that award ceremony Friday morning. As soon as he was done with that, his mom came and picked him up, and then I left and came to L.A. And Saturday, what was I doing Saturday? Oh, I had a ref. I ref Saturday night down in Orange County for the Showdown event, MMA event, I think.
Now, is that hard being? I know people boo the refs here. You know, Kim Winslow, Steve Mazzagatti.
Yeah, because they suck.
Right, I mean, certainly, even Herb Dean has been booed and stuff.
Yeah.
Now, are people booing you as a ref?
I got booed my whole career. So me getting booed as a ref, I don't even notice it. No. Here's what the deal is: with Kim Winslow, she has an older style of reffing, I don't want to say antiquated, but it's an older style of reffing, and that's why I don't like her reffing. She's a fine ref. I just don't particularly like the way that she refs or how she refs. Right. So I feel like she's too involved. She's like. Got her reffing skill back when it's like UFC 2 and 3. So you had to be involved because, guys, you don't know what's going on and trying to set the rules. I'm an uninvolved ref. I want to stay out of the way. I will not get in the middle of it. I'd say start, stop, and time is the only thing I really say unless I have to give a warning, like get your hand on the fence, stop touching the pants. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, I was going to say, you know, now that you're on that side of it, because Joe Rogan talks a lot about not wanting to have the fingers exposed in the gloves. And you're a, you've been a, you've, you are a fighter. Now going to the ref side – I mean, to me, when I watch it, it seems like you have to, because of the grappling that goes on, you have to have your fingers available.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and this so is, it seems like, to me, that argument is kind of a moot point.
Well, this is nothing against Joe. Joe is, like I said, all of us, I've said this before, I've seen a lot of interviews, all of us strive, anybody that's a commentator in the sport strives to be Joe Rogan. We want to be a guy that has a hugely successful show on television, can, you know, can be hugely successful at commentating, own a mansion, you know, live, like have the, you know, be able to go kill bears and eat them from head to toe. Like,
I don't want
to
have
we
that.
All wanna, we all want to be able to do that.
I don't
want
to do that.
Neither do
that.
I, not really. But, I mean, we all want to do that, but that's, but unfortunately, that's the difference, and that's why, you know, I'm different at how I commentate because I've actually been in there getting hit with guys that have fingers in there. It's not the fingers. It's the rules of how we apply them. You have to warn the fighters, and we do it before our pre-fight explanation of how the rules are going to be handled, especially here for CAMO in California, which is the amateur association that runs all the amateur events in California. Right, right. You have to be under CAMO. We tell them, look, if you want to judge distance with a straight arm like John Jones does,
right,
then you have to put your fingers to the ceiling. They have to be up in the ceiling. I'm giving you your hard warning right now in pre-fight.
In advance.
There's not going to be a stop and a finger wag, hey, don't do that again. Mm-hmm. If you reach out with an open hand towards the guy's face and you poke him in the eye 100%, it's a point off right away. I'm telling you right now I'm doing.
When I was in high school, my little brother played baseball, right?
And, hold on, you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a younger brother and older sister. Yeah, yeah. So my little brother,
is she hot?
She was. She's 40 now, but back in the day, she.
Hey,
was,
listen here, douche. I'm 40.
She's not going home with you and your wife. Okay, or you and your girlfriend.
I'm not married.
You and your girlfriend.
He's done with that. He's done with that. It's all three sets of pancakes.
Waffles, damn it, waffles.
So my little brother would play Little League, and the ref. Like the umpire wouldn't show up sometimes, so I would bring my umpire gear, right? And then I would jump in as if I was the real ump, and I would cheat so hard. Like he would be up, I'd be like ball. I was like basically like Naked Gun. Like it was so obvious. Like I was like the worst, and the kids would look at me like give me the thumbs up. Like I was like the worst. I almost caused a brawl one time because
parents take it very seriously,
and I was totally not taking. I wasn't even hired there. I was just showing up.
Showing up and interfering with the game.
Just a fucking.
That's like your tweets from last fight.
My text from last fight.
You just like to agitate. You're an agitator.
That was Evan's idea.
I think it's brilliant. It cracks me up. It cracks me the fuck up. But the funniest part is when people think it's really those guys saying it.
Oh, no, the best.
That's the best.
That's the funniest. Honestly, I'll go on Facebook afterwards and people will be like, I can't believe Tim Kennedy said that. And they'll be like, how the fuck did Brian Williams get on this?
What are you talking about?
It couldn't possibly.
Why is Pat Sajak and Vanna White even chiming in? Like, what is it? Like, seriously? Like, come on, guys.
Ross Perot knows MMA.
That is absolutely some of your best work.
I start crying. I literally check Facebook every hour just to see more people chime in. And then there's always that one girl going, it's not real. Right. I'm telling you guys, it's not real.
Do you have to spend a lot of time prepping that?
A lot. It has to be done by 6 a.m. night of the fight. And hard sometimes when I have like two shows that night,
right?
And then I have to go literally run from my shows to back there, and then you know during the week I'll kind of gather if Kanye, something happens with Kanye or something happens with this guy or that guy, they'll come in. But it also, like, the hard part is when, like, it's one thing if it's like, you know, Roy Nelson fighting this guy or even like a Josh Koscheck or someone, but when you get the guys from Brazil where you don't know anything about them, the two Brazilian guys, that's when it gets to be like, oh God. I mean, sometimes it's brutal, and I know when I read it and if it makes me laugh, I know it's good because I wrote it and I'm still laughing. That's when I know it's actually good.
Apparently,
you know?
I just laugh at everything I say. I have no gauge. I've been told many times this week that I just laugh at whatever I say. What can I say? I make myself laugh.
You make me laugh.
To finish up, the reason why I was asking that is because I was talking about the rest of my weekend, and like all day Sunday afternoon, I went and did, we were supposed to go on a long bike ride. Like a 50-mile or 55-mile yesterday, but it rained, so we're not going to ride in the rain, and I don't have that kind of skill, to be honest with you. So
it's not safe.
It's as safe as not riding
it's
in the rain.
It's not your riding just, I'm worried about. It's the other people I'm worried about.
It's the we're on the bike path, so there's no cars or anything, but it's wet and it's cold and it's sore, and I'm already old and I already got arthritis. I'm going to need the rest of it. But I did like 8 interviews for MMA Oddsbreaker Sunday after, And I realized that, wow, I spend, it might be a 15-minute interview, but I spend probably 40, 45 minutes of research before I get this guy on. So I'm doing 8 interviews. It was literally a week's worth of interviews, a week's worth of research trying to get the stuff together.
Well,
it's just,
because otherwise you're asking the same question that everyone else is asking, and it's like, you know, how's your training camp? How's this? Why'd you get into fighting? And it's also like me doing, as a comedian, I mean, you know, I did a radio, and I don't know, 9 million times, and people go, they go, oh, what was Last Comic Standing like? Or what was it like being on The Tonight Show? And it's the same three questions. And it's just like, you know, I'd rather, like when I asked, I think TJ Grant was fighting, he fought somebody and the guy had like a herpes on his lip. And I asked him about that. And he goes, nobody has ever asked me that fucking question. That, like to me, I was so proud. I was so proud of researching the fact that this guy had a herpes.
You exchange a lot of fluids.
Yeah, you'll definitely get herpes. You can get it. If that sort of popped open, he'd get it for sure. Oh,
by the way, your CM Punk call out is making a lot of people. Now, are you officially calling out CM Punk?
Yeah, I'll fight him in a minute. Come on, he's 0-0. He's old. He's broken. He's decrepity. I'll fight him in a second.
I mean, how long?
Actually, be Joe Silva to call me because I'm fat. So it'd be like the light guys get Sean Shelby. The fat guys get Joe Silva. So Joe knows my number. He can call me. I'd definitely fight CM Punk without a problem. Yeah.
How long do you think that fight would last, for real?
We probably get out of the first round because, you know, you want to toy them a little bit and make it look good and make sure everyone has it, you know, gets their popcorn and gets their money's worth. And then I'll, you know, put an elbow to the top of his forehead and take his arm home with me.
I mean, you wouldn't just take him down and finish it?
Even if he's messing around with, I'm going to talk a lot of crap right now, but let's be the rally of it is, no, I'm going to walk out there, I'm going to throw a bomb, I'm going to take him down to the ground, pass his guard, and, you know, put a forearm on his face and keep stomping on him until he quits, and we go as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Because it's all about making as much money as possible per minute. That's what it is.
Right.
You have a set amount of money you're going to make for the fight. If you win, some amount of money you make for the fight if you lose. So the assumption is I'm going to win, I want to make all that money in less than 3 minutes.
Right.
Then I made a lot of money per minute. They're going to tell my mom, look what I make per minute.
Wow. You're
more than a doctor I should have been.
But I mean,
you're like a chiropractor.
But you'd be a huge, I mean, look, I mean, what, you're 40-something is all, right?
42, I'll be 42.
But you're a huge name.
Mm-hmm.
So CM Punk, Frank Trigg, people would know Frank Trigg. I don't think
any commission would license it because he's 0-0 and I've got over 30 fights, 30 professional fights. So I don't think they'd
even though you're 42?
I don't think they let it. How old is CM? He's old too.
I think
he's
like 38 or something, probably.
Yeah, so he's over 35 is the cut. At 35 you start doing more tests, and then at 40 you get more tests, like for the commissions. So I think like I'll have 3 or 4 more tests than he does, but I mean I think he's still in that upper level where they might not sanction it.
Now what do you think of this so last week after we left, that you know, they had that big meeting at the UFC where they announced that now steroids are gonna be a 4-year ban if you get caught with PEDs.
Maybe. It's a maybe. It's not a definite 4-year. They're going to follow whatever WADA puts down. WADA's trying to make a decision whether they want to do 2-year or 4-year. And whatever they put down, they're going to follow. And they're going to ask the commissions to follow the same protocol. The UFC has a huge stick. They wield a lot of power when they come into commissions because they bring a lot of money. If they come in, you know, and that's always been the argument of going into New York. If we come into Madison Square Garden, we're bringing in, $10 million plus in new revenue for that weekend that we're there? Like, we bring your economy $10 million you weren't going to have. We go there twice a year. That's $20 million more just for New York City. Not for the state of New York. Just for New York City we're doing that in. So that's a lot of money. So they wield the big sticks. They go to the commission and go, look, we want you to follow the WADA protocol. We want you to follow whatever they state. If WADA says 4 years, it's 4 years. They say it's 2 years, it's 2 years. So they're trying to get everything established, and that's why they said
Have you ever got caught with steroids?
Have I ever been popped for steroids? No, I've never failed a drug test ever.
And you never took steroids?
Not when I was competing, no.
No, how many guys do you know take steroids? I mean, you've been the best gymnast in the world. Extreme Couture, you've been in Silva's gym, you've been that. How prevalent is it?
It was when, I think it was Access TV, it was Ken Shamrock and Dennis Hallman, like shows apart, like a couple shows apart, whatever, said it was like 80% or 50%, whatever. It's always been around 90%. It always has been. And now people are starting to realize it is, because all of a sudden you have, and we're talking about, people look at it differently. You look at PEDs, which are your steroids, and then you look at, you know, recreational drugs, which all are illegal, you know, underneath
and these. Awesome.
Yeah, let's be honest. We talked last time I was on 2 weeks ago. We talked about, everyone, you know, doing, you know, you win a fight, you're going to do a bunch of coke and a bunch of Molly. I mean, that's just what it is. So there's this thing of if you're doing drugs at all and you're a professional athlete, you are illegal. So like you get guys like John Jones got caught for coke, and then it wasn't. So, and understand, if you get caught, that's not the first time you're doing it.
Yeah, of course.
Don't think so. Now you got Anderson Silva. We knew Diaz was going to get popped for, you know, for weed. It was really close, though. He could have almost passed, but he didn't. That's the reality of it. Yeah. You're starting to get these guys are starting to get popped that you're like, oh, wow, like it's consistently now. And now all of a sudden Anderson Silva pops and fails. You're like, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah.
That's a hero. This is a guy that, that is a icon. This is a guy that.
For like three different types of stuff, too.
And he's getting blown out of the water. I'm sorry, Anderson. I know that you still have your ability to go in front of the commission and try to appeal it, but unless you can find something wrong with how they took the procedure,
right.
they didn't follow you right, they didn't watch you pee in the cup, they didn't whatever it is. If there's something wrong with the procedure, is the only way he's getting off this thing. Mm-hmm. He's gonna get fined. He's gonna get whatever it is, the suspension, whatever it is. Yeah. Two sides of me are saying two different things. One is saying that they're holding off to July to start this whole mass because they're waiting on Anderson to get his thing finished up and not have his suspension be a little bit less. But the other side of me is saying it's taking so long to get all the commissions on board with the water standard, to find all the testing warehouses, you know, because UFC knows where they're going. Even we may not know, but they know where they're going. So they're looking for the closest place to the venue to get stuff submitted for testing. Plus, all the fighters in the seven different, you know, in the three different continents to make sure that close to them, they get the right lab for analysis. That now with a guy like Anderson failing, you're going, well, anybody is up. I interviewed Johnny Hendricks this morning, and I said, look, Johnny, I've known you since you were 12. Like, I've known you forever.
Yeah.
I've known him forever. I'm telling you, you're suspect to me now because if Anderson Silva can fail. It's like if you popped hot, like my belief in the.
But do you think it might be this
out.
Brazilian pride where he didn't want to go out a loser, so he kind of went out and not a loser but off a loss, yeah. You know, losing twice to Wyben. He's like, I can't lose this next one. I am a hero. There's all these expectations. I have to make sure I'm going to win. And yeah. But now
I'm sure there is part of that, and that's what Johnny said too. Johnny was like, hey, I hope that's what happened. He just wanted to come back fast, and that's what happened. But I don't know. Like, my assumption always is, if you failed once, you've gotten away with it a bunch of times before that.
Okay, that makes total sense. Now, you being part of the 10% of people that never took steroids, mm-hmm. but now, if I'm part of the 10% of people that's not doing stuff, and you're in the gym with people, like guys you're training with, you know are taking stuff, yeah. right? Yeah. I mean, how much did that affect you?
Well, remember, I wrestled internationally. We were still trying to beat the Russians when the wall was still up. Like, that's when I first started getting really hot in the wrestling was in, you know, 90, 91, 92 is like, that's when the Russians were just, the wall was just starting to come down and we're just starting to get stuff put together and like we really were battling them. My whole career of remember all the old posters was Kenny Money and John Smith. The eagle taking the heart out of the bear was the big thing. It was the Russian bear versus the American eagle. And that was our process. We'd go overseas and we'd battle these guys and they were on government funded steroid projects. Yep. So you're battling against these guys who are getting funded by their governments and we were getting tested and we weren't getting, the only thing the government was funding was the tests to find out if we were using or not.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever seen the footage of East German female swimmers?
Yeah. Now there's two of them are men now. They took so many steroids.
Because the footage is hilarious.
No way.
Yeah. Because it's these little girls getting ready to swim and then these giant gorilla hybrid females just like hulking their way into the water.
God.
Go back. There must be some footage on YouTube. Look up East German swimmers from like 1985.
I don't find that hot.
It wasn't hot.
It has
nothing to do with looks. It's all about government pride.
But I'm saying, as far as the girls go, you ever meet a girl who's like super hot, then she gets into fitness, and then she slowly, she's getting more in shape, and then her jaw, and then you're just like, dude, what happened there?
A lot of my friends with girls are current IBF pros or whatever, IFFB, whatever the hell it is, pros, you know, current pros or just retired. And when they're in shape and they're competing that day, you're like, wow, that is some work to get in that shape. That is some dedication. That is some diet. Man, you look great. God, you look good. Then you wait about 72 hours after they're done competing. You're like, whoa.
Really?
What? Yeah, dude, it's an immediate blow up. Like immediate blow up.
A lot of them, when they get that shape, they grow beards or they have hair in their tits.
And they have thumbs in their pants. And
I remember the first time I ever got a hair in my mouth from a nipple. It was weird. You remember your first time?
Now, do you think steroids help? Do you wish that you would have taken roids for your fight with Bruce Buffer in the elevator?
I don't think it would have helped.
So he got into a... So Bruce Buffer wrote a book about how him and Frank came to blows in an elevator. Okay. Now, it didn't make any sense to me, being that Frank was one of the top five guys in the world at the time in fighting.
I was third. I was third right then.
And Bruce, while looking good, isn't really a fighter. I think he took some karate lessons.
Boxing, a little bit of boxing too.
Little boxing. Yeah. But will you tell us what happened?
I mean, here's the reality of the whole story. I don't know if you've ever been in an elevator before, but there's
maybe once.
There's Dana White. Tom at the time is his bodyguard, and he's got a different bodyguard now, but Tom used to be a sheriff in Vegas. He retired from being a sheriff and became Dana's right-hand guy. Incredibly smart. And
not a bad gig.
Quick on the fucking draw, too. That man.
Yeah.
Not
bad.
You didn't mess around with that.
All the guys on the floor.
Goldberg, Buffer, and Trigg. Five men. Five grown-ass men in an elevator. In an elevator. Yeah, in an elevator. So understand,
guys.
Understand the size of an elevator. Like, I don't know where you guys go to elevators, but I'm telling you, there's five guys in this elevator. So.
Yeah.
It's like the 13th or 14th floor at the Hard Rock. It does. I don't know about you guys. It doesn't stop anywhere. It goes straight down to the bottom. So we're talking 8, 9, 10 seconds maybe. Yeah. I'm talking to Dana. I'm not with the UFC at this point. I'm trying to get back in with the UFC. Dana is up for a conversation about me coming back. I'm like trying to figure out, do you want me – because he doesn't like my management team at the time. Like, hey, do you want me to do it directly? I'll do it with you directly and get it out of the way. Do you want my management team to contact you and I'll stay in the loop to make things be easier? Like, how do you want it to do? And Bruce, literally, no bullshit, gets on his knees in the elevator and goes, wow, I love this watch. And he grabs Dana's wrist. He starts looking at his watch from his knees. Like, he's on his knees in the elevator. Oh, my God, I love this watch. And he holds Dana's hand and stands up. He's got, he's like got a hand on his, like, he's handshaking with one hand and grabs with the other. So he can look at this watch. Now, watches, I get it because I'm a watch guy, too. Dana had an incredible fucking watch on. It was a great watch. So he stands up, and now he's having this conversation right in the middle of me trying to figure out a way to come back to the UFC, which I am desperately trying to do.
Right.
And I do the one thing you're never supposed to do to, I guess, I found out later you're not supposed to do this, to a ring announcer is chop him in the throat. And I fucking chopped him as hard as I could right in the throat.
Really?
I'm like, bang, I'm having a conversation here. Wait 10 seconds. Well, yeah. And so he's like, whoa, you can't chop a man in the throat. You know, use his voice for...
That's
wait, so you like karate chopped him in the throat?
A little... No.
Okay. Oh, up. So you went from your.
No, I went from my left. Use my left hand.
Yeah.
From my left hip up into his throat.
Okay.
Like the Departed.
Yes. Yeah.
Him in the Departed. In the deli.
Yes. Yes.
Hey,
go. Great. You guys have great. I gotta get you my movie stuff. You guys are great. So we now mind you, this is 10 seconds, like from top to bottom. So this story is way longer than how it actually happens. So he's like, you can't tell a man to throw his voice. I'm like, you're a ring announcer. Who cares? And I go back and I start talking to Dan again. Dan's like, now wants to get out of the way. And Tom, kind of angles Dan into the corner. So, Bruce now, you can tell he's starting to get amped up and red in the face because now I'm embarrassing him in front of Goldberg, Dana, his boss, Dana's bodyguard.
Was Goldberg announcing what was happening? Well,
I wish that would be great.
Okay,
so he's feeling disrespected, as he should at this point, because he's feeling like he's in the right. I'm feeling like I'm in the right. So he punches me, punches me in the stomach. And I'm like, you really want to get into this? So I crack him in the chest. And then I turn back around, and he hits me again. I'm like, I think Dana says, oh, it's going to be like one of those kind of nights. And I know, mind you, I'm in a t-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops. Like, I'm going home.
Yeah.
I was coming from Goldberg's room. I went up to Goldberg because at the time, we still are. Goldberg and I were really close friends up there. Had a couple shots of vodka in his room and then came and were coming downstairs. And I was going to say goodbye.
Were you hitting him hard, like trying to knock him out?
No. And I'm not hitting him in the face. We're not doing face shots.
You're just messing around with him.
So I have a big diver's watch on.
Yeah.
A Swatch diver's watch with a big fishbowl face on it and a big metal bracelet. Most of the watches I wear now have metal bracelets on because I sweat so much and I don't like leather. So I'm always wearing this metal bracelet. Well, he's right-handed. I'm left-handed. So as he's punching me with the right, I'm punching him with my left. It's like maybe four punches thrown total. But he starts to throw. I'm like, well, this is just dumb. So I'm going to stop him from punching. So I go to catch his hand. As he punches me, he slides down my metal bracelet and tears his thumb open.
Yeah. Oh.
So he has, and he has this, he'll tell you, I have a $400 silk shirt on. That's his thing. And so he tore the thumb flap back on his thumb, and he has to go get stitches done. So now, mind you, we get down, and he walks out, and he says something like, I'm tougher than Matt Hughes, right? I'm like, I hit you harder than Matt Hughes, or something like that.
Was he joking?
It was like he was being serious. Like, it's something weird like that. So then he goes in, and we part ways, whatever, and God bless him, because... He goes, and I saw the photo, so I know this is 100% true. He goes and gets the stitches in his thumb, wraps it up, comes back, and goes out that night. So he goes to the hospital, comes back out, and he's out running around with some of the best looking model guys and girls that I've seen in a while in Vegas at the time. Yeah. He was like running around with all of them. And then, like, years later, the book comes out where he jumps on me and puts a Rinnick choke on. And I'm like, guys, we're in five grown ass men in an elevator. how are you jumping on my back? There's no space for you to jump on my back unless I literally go turn around backwards, give you my back.
Yeah,
bend down for you to jump on.
But you did hit him first. But you did hit him. He was okay. He was checking out Dana's watch, and you did neck chop him.
Yeah, chop. Yeah, absolutely.
Which was not. I mean, that kind of was not uncalled for. No.
No, it was completely called for. Completely called for. You're in a meeting with George Greenberg at Fox. You're in a meeting with George Greenberg. You're sitting. You're literally in an elevator with George Greenberg, and he's about to give you a double pay raise. For what you're doing now, give you more work and double the money for the next stuff you're going to do. And you're middle of, yes, my guy will call you. I have, you know, blah, blah, blah. We'll get this whole thing done. And I jump in the middle of it and start a new conversation with him and stop your conversation right in the middle of you getting off your dad's couch.
I probably wouldn't neck chop you.
Yes, you absolutely fucking would. You would neck chop.
You're not Frank Trigg.
You would neck chop the shit out of me.
I'm not neck chopping. No offense, dude.
Move.
I may be like, hey, man, I'm trying to have a conversation.
Yeah, the punishment doesn't exactly fit the question.
when you neck chop somebody.
I would have used words first, like, excuse me, we're having a. But I guess to Frank Trigg, a throat chop is the equivalent to saying, excuse me.
And he wants a fight. He does want a fight.
Yeah. And he wants to show I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready to fight. Look, I'll fight Bruce Buffer right here. Bam, neck chop him. Depart.
I'm in.
Depart, motherfucker. Wait, it's my turn.
Wait, so Bruce's book, he said he rear naked choked you?
Yeah, I know. It's fucking silly. I know.
He rear naked choked you in an elevator.
Adorable. I mean, come on, guys. Let's not be silly. I mean, but you know, now when this airs, Bruce is gonna be like, he's gonna hit you up. And then, you know, come on, I'm really, you know, let me come back in and tell my side of the story. And,
yeah, right. Which
like, okay, all right, Bruce, come on in. We'll keep selling books. We'll keep selling books for you. I think it's in chapter 13 or something silly. Like, come on.
He's gonna have to. It's gonna be one of those re-released with new information.
Yeah, let's go. I'm gonna write that. What's it?
Not the updated version.
Not the forward. What is it when you write the when somebody writes the end? Like you have like Dan Gable write your forward, but then you write somebody else writes the what's the thing called at the end of the book? Not the end notes, but there's somebody writes something the back flap or whatever.
The epilogue.
The afterword. Yeah. When someone goes and writes the afterword, we can update the afterword.
Well, now after it was over, did Goldberg go? It's all over.
I imagine that's what he does during sex. That's the whole thing.
Oh, man. That's how he comes.
Oh, baby.
It's all over. Oh, by the way, I love it when you do your impression of Bruce Buffer. He sounds just like Rodney Dangerfield. Hey, you cut my hand.
Yeah, I know, right?
I don't respect at all.
I'm not very good at impressions. Like, I'm horrible, so that's my go-to is Rodney Dangerfield.
Frank's actually a really funny guy. He did stand-up. He opened for me in Vegas one time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was. I'm still in that. The problem with my comedy at live show is that I'm still in that commentator mode where I don't care if you give me a reaction or not because I can't hear you when I'm sitting at the commentating booth. I can't hear the people at home right now.
It was his first show ever. Yeah. Remember your first show ever?
Oh, yeah.
In a Vegas crowd in front of 200 people.
Was this at the Bally's?
Yeah, at Bally's. Yeah. He just gets up. And then I'm like, at the end, he's like kind of beating. I'm like, dude. It's like saying, hey, Adam, I want to train.
Jump in the ring.
No practice. Yeah. Okay, let's go to the octagon and see how you do.
We're the Bally's in Vegas. Get on stage.
Let's see how you do against Dennis Hallman in your first fight ever without any, like, I mean, come on.
I had fun. I loved it. It was great. I had a great time. But my timing is bad, and I got to get my rhythm down better. Like, I got to remember that, like, when there's no, I have a mic in my hand. Yeah. But I'm not calling a fight.
It was your first show ever. Down, you had never done an open mic. Never done it. It was your nothing. First show. I mean, you did amazing, actually.
You know, I actually I teach stand up workshops if you ever want to.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, if you
free?
Ever
for free?
Workshop,
good. Yeah, for free? Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Good.
That would be amazing.
If it's for free, it's for me.
All right, so we're going to call Sarah McMahon right now. Sarah's coming off a tough loss to Misha Tate.
Yeah, heck of a fight, though.
Yeah.
Fight, I think she should have won.
She should have won, yeah.
She had that fight.
Misha trains, you know, in my camp at Couture's in Vegas, and I thought Sarah was going to win. And Misha proved me wrong. She went out there and put the
match. So we're going to talk to her right now. And then we also have James Krause on the show. Marina wants to call in. I love Marina. She's like,
where is she?
She's working. She's like,
working with Ronda?
She's working, but she's like, can I please call in? She misses the. And how am I going to say? I'm not going to say no.
No, of course.
So she's scared of me. She doesn't want to come in because she knows I'm going to be in studio. She has this thing for me now.
She does.
I was going to say, I think you secretly
She likes
on.
Bald guys with beards. Fighters. I swear to God. Hey, that's
you
actually
got a tugboat, and you are in, my man.
So we're going to talk about UFC fight night that happened last night as well. As we're going to talk about UFC 184, give our predictions. We're going to talk about Mayweather-Pacquiao, UFC 187. We got a lot of shit to cover. First, we're going to call Sarah McMahon. Thank you, Evan the Beard, and stick with us. So we have the beautiful, talented, strong, amazing fighter, Sarah McMahon, is on the line. You're here with the Greg Wilson, the comedian, and Frank Trigg.
Hey, Sarah. Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I'm just getting ready for practice.
Nice, nice. Now, are you practicing with Marcelo still, or?
No, I'm back in South Carolina, so I'm going to Revolution Martial Arts.
Nice.
I'm doing their gi class.
Nice. No, where in South Carolina?
It's in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
How far is that from Myrtle Beach?
Ooh, that's like 4.5 hours, unfortunately.
Damn, I have a show at Myrtle Beach. I was gonna invite you to come. So now, Sarah, your last fight was it was a great fight. It was probably the best fight of the night. It was an awesome fight,
incredible fight.
You came off on like the wrong end, but it was a very close fight. I think you had Misha hurt in the first. Were you surprised by Misha's durability? And what would you do differently if you were a fighter again? Tell us about that fight.
Okay, so I wasn't surprised that I hurt her on the feet. My striking has been. Like, I've always had a lot of power from, you know, like, developing a lot of strength and explosiveness from wrestling. So that wasn't really surprising to me. And this camp, I, like, definitely heavily focused on my striking. I thought it would be a really good area to exploit. And I think that if I could change something, it's just a cage experience, which would be coming in a little bit more calm and composed. You know, I talked with my coaches about it, Cody Freeland and Bill Nurse, and if I could have just, you know, shuffled in slowly, you know, and been a little bit more composed when she got hurt, I would have been able to, you know, finish the fight then. So definitely something to work on. But, I mean, that's kind of just that happens, you know, from having a lot of fights under your belt, and you can't hit people and hurt them like that in practice, or you really shouldn't. You don't really get as much experience with that.
Do you think a part of you, like, do you think a part of you, were you surprised by her ability to kind of take your punch and then kind of come back in the second and third?
No, I mean, she was, after the first few exchanges, you know, like she was, not trying to engage as much. She was definitely backing up more. So I didn't know if that was I didn't know she was hurt. And then I also didn't know if that was a strategy because sometimes it's easier to take people down if you get them kind of drawn into you rather than chasing the takedown. So,
little possum.
You know, like that's, I wasn't, you know, she took the punches, but she definitely did not seem to like them at all. So
I mean, I thought you were going to finish her in the first. I really thought that, and you know, I wasn't surprised because you have good power for a 135er girl. I mean, you have exceptional power. Do you think maybe?
Yeah, I'm just as shocked as you. Seriously, like, I knew I could hit hard, but honestly, when it came back out and like I had that kind of power, I thought. Okay, I can hit more accurate and, you know, maybe get a knockout by hitting the right spot. But, you know, like, really after that fight, I was like, oh, my God, I am just going to stand and absolutely clobber people now. Like,
don't do it.
I can hit that hard. I'm going to Hulk smash. And that's basically my technique. I try to be so much more technical, but I'm kind of a Hulk smash.
Hey, Sarah, this is Trigg talking. I'm telling you right now from experience, don't fucking do that. Because all wrestlers get into that mindset of, hey, you can't take me down. Screw you. I'm just going to punch you in the head as hard as I can. Eventually, and we all get beat somehow. It's just do what you do best. Hit her hard. Take him down. And then hit him hard again later on the ground. Like, you got to. But my biggest question is, Misha was hurt. She's durable. We all know that. She's going to find a way to come back. We get that. She was on the ropes. You could have put her out easily in that first round. It seemed like. What did you see? Because you're obviously there. We're just at home on the couch watching it, you know, yelling at you. What did you see that was like, okay, I got to slow down a little bit. I got to back off. Because it looked like to us, wait when you got on top of her, that, okay, this is it. We're 4 or 5 punches away.
Well, yeah. She did a good job of just tying me down. I really was trying to, you know, get my hands free. But also, like, I have a problem of losing people's hips sometimes whenever I throw too much, too frequently. So I really kind of worked on being able to, like, throw and elbow, but then also keep control of their hips so I don't lose the position. You know, like, it's a kind of a fine balance. But that's another thing, too, of not having as much experience. It's the same thing in wrestling when you break somebody. if you're not experienced at breaking people, you know, in a ton of competition, I couldn't smell blood in the water as well. You know, if I, when I got on top, I didn't realize that I was like that close to the point. I thought that I'd kind of, she'd weathered the storm and she started to get her composure back. So, you know, like that's something that, you know, the more I'm out there and the more that I can experience that, the more I can say, okay, I know I am just a couple of punches away. And I've gone back and watched video of guys that, that ended fights that way from like a nice hit and then, you know, smart ground and pound and not getting tangled up and not letting the guy survive it. And I've seen other people survive it too. So, that's what basically I've just been looking at, like what positions they prefer to be able to stop it. You know, how the pace that they went of their strikes to be able to finish it. So things like that, just to make sure I can capitalize on such an awesome opportunity.
Do you think
maybe in my next fight?
Do you think maybe you're too nice? I mean, I hate to say it, but it, like, but I like, I look at you and you're such a beautiful person, honestly. And I'm not just saying that like physically, yeah, you're a pretty girl, obviously great, but you know, you're married. Okay. But you also go to third world countries, Indonesia. You help feed starving children. You help build houses for people. You know, you travel the world. You're kind of this hippie girl. You're not a very material girl. You hang out. You walk around in flip flops and bare feet. Do you think maybe you're just too nice?
I'm absolutely not too nice. Not when it comes to being in the cage. Like it. Like I've always been a nice person, even wrestling, but. You know, like there's everybody has different sides of them, and most people maybe don't like to admit it if they're in a combat sport, but there is a side to them that enjoys beating and breaking other people, like, and I'm no different. So I can kind of separate that as two different aspects of my personality, but make no mistake at all, when I'm in there and I make those connections and hit people, and whenever, you know, like I work and get a submission and I'm completely controlling someone's body and they give up, that is a great feeling to me. So and you have to be a certain kind of person to enjoy that. So yeah. I have a very mean, ruthless side too. So,
all right.
And anybody who's ever, you know, crossed me or threatened, you know, my daughter's safety, they see that side and they definitely do not like it. So.
And I remember last time you were on the show, I asked, cause I know that your husband was a wrestling coach. And I asked you if sometimes you have a tough time determining who gets top and bottom during sex because you don't like to be on your back. And then your husband hit me up on Twitter and he said that he was on top. Is that true?
Well, I'm not with him anymore.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, so, really? You guys are real? Okay. I'm sorry. I had no idea.
No, I didn't. I keep things private, so I'm not really. When people don't know,
I'm sorry.
How could you not know?
I gotta jump in. Are you dating anybody right now? Are you seeing anybody? Do I have a shot again?
Am I what?
Are you dating anybody? Are you seeing anybody? Do we have a shot?
No. I'm not seeing anybody.
I'm just trying to sneak myself back in. That's all I want to do. Just want to be by Sarah McMahon again. That's all I'm trying to do.
Really? Have you ever hit on her back in the day?
No. I never. The thing with Sarah is like it's funny because when we would tour together and train together sometimes and be around each other, I never would hit on her because I had so much respect for how she trained. She's one of the first real women that I met that trained just as hard as the men and wasn't in it just because she was kind of good at something in her little small town. She really wanted to be the best, and it showed if you go and look at her storied career. So I never hit on her. It's like some of the girls.
Yeah,
I just
and
away.
Actually, like in most of the gyms I go to, that's the case too. Like I won't find out until like way later that like, you know, somebody liked me, but they would never, ever come on to me while I was practicing. And, you know, like they probably would have, they can tell that they would have gotten like a very dirty look or, you know, because I'm there to train, so I'm not there.
Yeah, you have
can
to
tell
wait.
The people that are in there to find a boyfriend and the people who are there to be serious. So.
It's tough to find the right time to hit on a girl like Sarah. I mean, to be honest, and it's got to be lonely for her. I mean, I know it sounds, but it's got to be lonely because you're around guys all the time. You're like, wow, I'd like to be hit on. But people like being hit on. People like realizing they're attractive.
I don't think Sarah.
I get a lot of enjoyment of like I'm almost like taken in as like one of the guys. So like I get like a lot more out of like becoming friends and joking around. But truthfully, it's almost like a weeding itself out process because only guys who are like pretty assertive, pretty bold, you know, like. Kind of like stronger type of personality mm-hmm. will be like, well, you know, I don't care. I'm going to hit on her. And that, and that's a typically the type of guy that I would go for anyways, not like a a guy who's too scared to go for it. You know,
so
like
Sarah, if we hook up, would you wear your medal? Like if we ever, like if we ever had like hooked up like during like, you know?
Oh my God. No, that would probably be a little too weird.
All right. Okay. I'm just saying, how awesome would that be? She's a silver medalist
in
the Olympics.
That'd be amazing.
Tell me, you would
be on top and it's just like dangling in your face.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Championship in your face. That'd be I'd be into it.
That'd be the closest I ever came to.
I don't think so. I don't think
the closest you ever came.
That's
I'm sorry, sir. We took us the wrong path, but it's just.
That's okay. I'm on purpose.
Well, because no, we
wrong. You guys don't.
Well, the last. I was on the podcast 2 weeks ago, and this is the thing I have about women's MMA. I don't like it because it's still in that fetish stage where a lot of guys watch it because two hot chicks beating up on each other.
But not just because it's two hot chicks beating up. It's just an added component.
I disagree. You know what it is? For me personally, though, Frank, I coach wrestling. I coach girls wrestling. I coach guys wrestling. To me, I don't look at it as that at all. I think it's funny.
You're the coach.
I also think, no, but you know, I'm talking about even watching when it's MMA. It's funny to make a joke when a girl like Felice Herrig is fighting a Paige VanZant of, oh, these chicks are hot or blah, 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 blah. Or like, the loser's going to be the guy sitting in front of me. I mean, there's a lot of jokes. There's a lot of jokes to be made. You know? However, when it comes down to it, I think that you're overestimating the amount of guys that are really getting off to women's MMA. I do. Right, Sarah?
Well, you know, I don't view it any different. Like, I'm around girls, and I hear how they talk about the guys. And guys are out there just wearing these tight little spandex shorts. And, you know, girls can be just as crude as the guys. So, and it is a sport that's showing the skin. And, you know, the way you're, like, you're taking your clothes off, it's almost like a little striptease. Like, so, I mean...
So you've seen the promotion for the men's swimsuit edition. So, Sarah, you've seen the swimsuit, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition for men, then that they're promoting right now, right?
No, but
so
that's
you've seen the fact
that awesome.
That
they can have that tasteful little thong.
So you've seen the 15,000 posts of Sarah flexing when she makes weight of her abs. That's been photoshopped and refotoshopped.
But that's
I have the exact same pose. And a small, she's wearing board shorts. I have bikini bottoms on.
You're talking,
and not one person has photoshopped that to anything else.
You were naked. Sarah's they have. You were naked in Playgirl. Okay.
And no, and they've only, and all they did in Photoshop that one is photoshop my dick out of it. So really, like, what do you? So you're talking about it not being a fetish. You're crazy. You're nuts.
There's always a fetish in everything. There's always going to be creeps in anything. There are
sex sells. I mean, like,
yeah,
there's a reason why a bubblegum ad will have like a girl in a bikini on it, or a fast food restaurant will have some beautiful girl eating a sandwich, you know, on the beach. And I mean, it's MMA is like really no different. I just think that, you know, like we're athletes, we're in great shape, you know, like we go out there in a super aggressive, you know, a kind of unique atmosphere for, especially for females, but it's a very, like, very manly thing watching two guys fight. You know, I can see why it would appeal to either sex.
How are you doing with your daughter in all this, like explaining it to her? Cause I know it's gotta be tough. Cause she's at that age now where she knows what mommy does. She sees what mommy, you know, I want to be like mommy, you know, but then she has to see mommy's opponents. You're totally different than the other group, you know? So how is it teaching her, like, this is what I do?
Well, actually, I use things for learning lessons. Like, I came home and she's like, Mom, why did you only win one round instead of winning two rounds? You know, and I was like, I just tried the best that I could. I said, remember when I talked about, you know, because she's ultra competitive. So I was like, you can't win everything. You just do the best that you can, you know? And then another time, like, her little friend was like, oh, you had an amazing, or you did great in your fight. And my daughter turns around, she's like, you did great in the first part of your fight.
did she ask you why you stepped over the wizard in the third round?
No. No, she didn't.
Why did
but
you do
know
that?
What?
Honestly.
She'll get to that point.
But why?
She hates losing, and she hates me losing.
But why did you? I mean, honestly, Sarah, I have to ask you this, because I mean, you're a girl who's a silver medalist in wrestling, the highest level. You've accomplished more than 99.9 billion people times a billion in wrestling. Misha had a wizard. But you stepped over the back, which is like wrestling 101. What were you thinking? Was that
no,
just
no? If you watch some wrestlers, you can see that if they are tipped to the balance point, which if a cage wasn't in the way, if I could have thrown a cross body leg in and drove in with my hips better, I would have taken her back. So, yeah, it was definitely an error on my part because her hips were higher than my hips. But if I'd been able to secure it, it would have been brilliant.
You're right.
And the things are, I'm not used to the cage being in the way. And truthfully, when I did that throw, I honestly expected just to bump her hips and her to square up with me and us to stay on our feet. I didn't, like, usually when you come in for a hip toss against somebody who has a wrestling background, you, as you're coming in with your hips, they're already moving their hips off of you, of it. You know, like, I really expected to bump it. So I was kind of caught off guard that I was able to. And I thought, well, when we land, if I can step over and secure either mount or take her back, but I didn't have the right hip pressure and they weren't high enough. So,
gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Cause I was okay. All right. That makes total. I like it, Sarah.
And it was taking a risk. It really was. Like I kind of maybe just got a little too greedy with the position.
Okay. Listen. All right. Okay. Listen, you're going to come back. I know you will. You're a champ. It wasn't like you got hurt in the fight. You know,
I had a little knot on my forehead and a little shiner. I get a shiner in every single fight. I can get punched one time and I'll come out with a shiner.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But you didn't get hurt. So, I mean, even in the Ronda fight where you got that knee to the rib cage, it wasn't like you inflicted any kind of brain damage or you just got the wind knocked out of you. This one, you just got dominated. Yeah. So you're losing, but you're not getting hurt. You know, so
yeah, and wrestlers are able to control people's body well enough, I think, a lot of times to not get too injured. But like Frank said, and I'm telling you, I'm going to take your advice, is that, you know, if we don't start to just stand up and strike with people, we can control a lot of that to protect ourselves. So, and I think it increases the longevity of it. So maybe I won't get in there and trade with people, but I am going to hurt them. Well, I'm going to get a knockout.
Here's the other thing, too, Sarah. For me, listening to what you've said and watching the fight a couple different times, knowing now that you have the striking ability that you do on your feet, you don't have to worry about holding their hips anymore. You can punch the crap out of them on the ground. If they get away, so be it. They can't take you down, and you can hit them again.
Yeah.
And then you can take them down when you want to. So if you get that first takedown, in my opinion, you'll talk to Phil, you'll talk to Marcelo, you'll talk to everybody else, and you'll kind of formulate, in my opinion, be conservative the first takedown, like the first striking sequence to takedown. And once you take him down, you're like, oh, that was easy. Now you know I can do this to this girl all day long. I'm going to punch the crap out of her. She gets away. So what? I'll take her down again. And trust me, you keep taking somebody down 2-3 times in a round, they're going to quit come the second round because they're exhausted from trying to keep you off them. And then you'll be able to knock them out way easier in the end. You'd be surprised. My submission game was really, really good long before anybody ever saw it. Because I was wasting guys and getting them so tired, they would quit. I wasn't hitting them hard enough to knock them out. I don't have that kind of power. Not like the power that you have. I was hitting guys and they were just like, I'm tired of getting hit. I'm tired of being taken down. And they were just quitting. They were just physically fatigued. Now, you can hit somebody hard. They'll come up and make a mistake and try to lunge in. They'll run right into your hand and fall down face first. And that will be beautiful.
Yeah.
So who do you want
to
fight?
I'm actually, like, I've worked on a lot on being able to strike while backing up. That's like a very good survival thing. In rooms with boys who are pretty fast.
So who do you want to fight next, Sarah?
Oh crap, I didn't even think about that. You know, like I know that like Alexis Davis has Sarah Kaufman, but you know, she's like one of the top 5 girls, so I'd love to fight her. I think that would be a super exciting fight because she's a brawler. But you know, like I always just want top 10 girls. You know, I know that's like super greedy of me because there's only so many of them and they have to kind of fight other girls too, but I don't know. Like I'm one of the older girls in the division, so I think I should get a little bit of leeway like that. They've got probably longer careers, so they can wait and fight each other later.
Nice.
And now that you're a single MILF on the prowl, are you looking for?
I'm not on the prowl. I don't. I pretty much just do what I love to do, and I'll be taking care of my daughter. And then
Are you coming to LA this week?
Things happen if they happen. Right. Am I what?
Are you coming to LA this week for the fights?
No, I'm actually not gonna.
I'm gonna be here. I was hoping you'd come in. I'm sorry, sir. I'm trying. I got this whole scam going on my head now. I'm just trying.
Sarah, Frank has a girlfriend, right? And what they do is they pick out other hot girls.
It's not what we do.
And then they take them home. But it might be good for you because that way you don't have to get committed to them. You could just go and hook up with Frank and his girl. No, kidding.
Yeah, I just got out of like an 8.5-year relationship. Like, not really, like, super interested in jumping back into anything. I am the perfect. I'd rather just have fun.
Yep, I am the perfect rebound. I am the perfect non-fun rebound guy. Perfect.
Every woman that ever slept with me did it out of revenge. Women don't choose me. You want to piss off your ex-husband? You sleep with the Greg
like,
Wilson.
Let me be that guy.
Yes.
He will look at you and be like, "How could you let him?"
We should do a dating show where it's like us three competing for like the MMA Bachelorette with Sarah McMahon, Adam, Frank, and Greg, and we all compete.
We can have a whole tournament. Fight it out.
Oh, I think Frank would win. But
well,
but
it'd be different. We do different things, you know. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm killing all of you. I don't care. Even if I lose, I'm still winning. It just doesn't matter.
Listen, if you want a guy you can easily break, I'm the guy.
That technique I was talking about, Sarah. This is how you do it.
You want to break Greg Wilson? I would pay to see Sarah go out with the Greg Wilson.
Oh, man.
That would be the funniest date of all time. I bet you'd make her laugh.
I'm very confident. I'm confident, like with my personality. You know?
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, if you wanted to break me, it wouldn't be that much of a challenge. You know, if you decided you didn't like something I was doing, you'd be like, okay, good night.
Yeah, honestly, I think, honestly, I think that you need a comedian right now.
I think so.
I think that's what you need, a comic that you can go out with and, you know.
That comes into town. You only have to see him like once every month.
She would scare me. Sarah's arms are so big and her shoulders are so jacked. Oh, my God. Getting a handy, you'd rip off my, I swear to God. You would rip it and throw it somewhere.
It's so weird how you're saying that out of disgust, and I'm just getting turned on. It's so strange. I'm kidding, sir. I'm kidding. I am.
That would be terrible. That would be terrible.
I get picked on, like, every single day by all the guys in my gym, so you're not
totally used to it.
Really?
You can't hurt my feelings.
Oh, yeah. She ends up with a bunch of pervs. Every time I interview her, she's like, oh, yeah. Like, off before you start the interview, she's like, oh, yeah. It's like... Her group of guys she hangs out with, her friends, like her really close friends, are all perverted. They're all like,
of course,
super psycho nuts, and she sees the worst of it because she's like the hot chick, and it's like this whole thing. Oh, it's
she's the hot cool chick that can kick their ass.
Yeah.
So yeah,
break me.
So, well, listen, Sarah, it was a pleasure having you on the show. I am a fan for life. I don't think people realize how great of a girl you are. And I mean, honestly, she goes to Indonesia and builds homes for homeless people.
Listen, dating me would be charity. I think we all agree that.
You're such a good person, and you're a winner at life. I mean, so.
But before we let her go, though, I need to apologize for two things to Sarah. One, I'm apologize right now for when this podcast airs, you're gonna get hit up all the time. I apologize for making that happen. And two, I'm gonna apologize for any drunk texting that I do with you anytime between now and the next year and a half. So just apologize now. And
okay.
Any of those photos that come out,
post them on social media. You know,
if I send you a photo, if I send you a photo, it's not me unless you like it, then it's me.
Yes.
Okay. If you have any tattoos that are identifiable in the picture, sorry for your luck.
Oh.
Hey, it's already been out there. Like, everyone's already seen it.
Yeah,
so
everyone's seen his half black penis.
I'm not worried about
and
it.
It's,
man.
It's quite the.
Do you like a lot of bush or trimmed?
He has it. He has tattooed your name so he can hit on girls. Oh my God! I have your name tattooed on my penis.
See? Yes, and everybody wonders why we like her.
See how these guys? See how the guys I'm around have corrupted me?
Yes, I love
think
it.
They made you better.
Yes, exactly. Improvement.
They've improved all of your game.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Sarah, and have a great week and good luck with everything.
Awesome. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. So that was Sarah McMahon. Single now.
Single. I love the second. Like, it went from like a really traditional interview, and then she said she was no longer with her husband, and the wheels just shot right off.
Absolutely. So let's go.
Well, you never want to disrespect the husband that you don't ever see.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, of course.
But I'll definitely disrespect the next boyfriend. Disrespect.
So we're going to try Marina Shafir. Marina actually couldn't be with us today, but she's like, hey, can I call in? I'm like,
why can't she be with us?
She's training or she's working or she's got something.
Hold on, she still works?
Yeah. She
doesn't have a lot of fights.
She doesn't have a lot of fights. She only had two pro fights.
So?
So you got to pay those bills every month.
Yeah. I mean,
I thought she had some rich boyfriend or something living in New York, you know, driving big cruise ships or something. And,
yeah, but she still works. Works at a barista every... I think 5 days a week she works.
Shut up. Really?
Yeah.
See.
So what she really needs is a sugar daddy.
Yeah, probably. Well, I don't think she needs that. She probably likes working. So we're going to try to call Marina right now.
me. I feel like you look at me like you're everything I don't want my son to be.
I look at you. You're everything I don't want my daughter to be.
Yeah.
That's why she's going to wind up dating a guy like me. Yep. Just to drive you nuts.
Fucking A. Now he's ready.
Nobody likes you, Adam.
Hey, this is Marina. I'll leave a message. I'll call you
right back.
Let's
leave the message on that thing. Don't hang up.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, Marina, what's up? It's Adam Hunter. We're on the podcast right now on your answering machine.
Yeah, we're just leaving you a sweet little message.
Hope you're doing well and you're training hard. You're definitely missed.
You are. I mean, we never got a chance to explore whether or not you wore a bra last week.
Yeah, yeah. Greg does not think that you wear a bra on the show.
I don't think you do. I want to know.
Frank, what do you think?
Does it matter?
It doesn't matter. I mean, I think it's sexier if you're not.
Really?
Your boobs look good without the bra on?
There's that little...
She doesn't think she has the biggest boobs. She thinks she has small boobs.
Right, and that's what I think is sexy about it. Let them jiggle around. Let them do a little dance.
You're more of a small boob guy?
I'm a whatever boobs wind up in my mouth. So, you know what I mean? That's how I pick them. Yeah. In my mouth, I like them.
I know exactly. Yeah, I'm that kind of guy too. Actually,
yeah. If you let me touch them, they're now my favorite.
All right, well, Marina. So sorry you couldn't be on the podcast this week. We'll see you next week. We love you, and I'll see you next week. All right. So Krause is ready. All right, that was hilarious. That was a good segment. And that's,
good
on, and that's on her answer machine, too.
She's going to keep that one for sure.
All right. So, all right, let's all right, call Colin Krause. All right, cool. He's ready. Okay, cool.
Hello.
James Krause. Hello? Hey, James Krause. It's Adam Hunter. You're with the Greg Wilson and Frank Trigg on the MMA Roasted podcast. How are you? Are you in a well?
Yeah, man, I'm doing great.
Oh, great. Awesome, man. So you got a big fight coming up on Saturday.
You just asked if I'm in a well or if I'm doing well.
No, I asked if you were in a well, but...
like I'm in a well?
Yeah, it was cutting out.
It was cutting out, but now I think now we're good. You got a big fight Saturday in L.A. Are you in L.A. right now or no?
No, I leave tomorrow.
Nice. So you're... how are you, man? Are you ready for this fight? Are you pumped? Are you hungry to get back in there? Talk to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely pumped, ready to get back to my winning ways, where I belong. You know, not to sound too cliche here, but I'm definitely prepped and the best I've ever been. I just keep every fight. I feel like I get better, and you know, as long as I show up on Saturday and I bring my tools to the table, I just don't see any possible way that I can lose this fight.
Well, that's the attitude right there. Woo!
now your last fight against Masvidal. Masvidal's a monster. It seemed like you just couldn't get started. Like you just had a tough time. It seemed like sometimes you're just having a bad night. Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah. So if I'm James Krause and I work at Subway, man, there's sometimes on a Saturday night where I just don't show up to Subway and I don't make good sandwiches. You know, it happens every once in a while. So, yeah, to answer your question, I just didn't show up, man. I just highly underperformed. And, you know, it's my job this Saturday to make sure that doesn't happen again. I usually bounce back very well from a loss. You know, I didn't take any time off after the last loss. I immediately went into training again. I think I took maybe a couple days off and got right back to training. And, you know, I think I just need to do a better job of mixing things up. I have a tendency to go out and want to please the fans a little too much sometimes. I just want to keep things interesting. I like to strike because that's what the fans want to see. But I think I need to do a good job of, you know, mixing things up, work the takedowns in, and at least show them. You know, I think just to keep people honest, keep people guessing. And I feel like I have the tools to be exciting on the ground as well. So that's something I'm definitely looking forward to doing, and I'm not necessarily looking for the takedown. I'm not necessarily looking to strike, but I just think I need to do a better job of mixing things up, and I think that'll open up everything.
I mean, you're a guy who's had such a career, man. I mean, you're not obviously, you know, you were a guy who was the number one prospect in the world in the country at one point. Then you start off your career, you're like 11-0 before you fight Donald Cerrone in your first big WEC fight. Then you end up in Titan FC, RFC, WEC, try out for the Ultimate Fighter, don't make the house, come back, you land back in the UFC. I mean, you're a guy who's fucking tenacious, who just keeps bouncing back. Does it get exhausting, or are you just the kind of guy that wakes up every day and you're like, man, what? I don't care what the fuck you throw at me, I'm throwing back harder?
You know, I think with maturity has become that attitude that says, you know, whatever it takes type of deal. But I'd be lying to you if I told you that there definitely wasn't times where I was struggling mentally to see if I keep wanted, you know, if I wanted to keep doing this or not. But now, you know, it's just, I have goals in front of me, and I literally, you know, I tell people this all the time. You know, people ask me, you know, what is something that I can do to really make a difference? You know, as far as like, how can I reach my goals? And it's usually fighting related because I fight, obviously. But I say, look, every day I wake up, I clear my schedule, and I prioritize my goals. You know, what are my goals right now? What's important to me? Boom, I put them on the schedule. Those are the first things that go on. Not anything else. Not sleep. Not spending time doing other crap. Not playing Xbox. Not watching movies. My goals. You know, the UFC, my business. Those are the top priorities. You know, obviously comes out with family and stuff like that. Those are my goals. So I wake up and I drive towards those goals every single day. And you know, I'm just a workhorse at it. That's all I do. That's all I care about. And I become obsessed with reaching my goals.
Now, Frank,
don't you still run in the gym? Right.
I don't run it anymore. No.
Okay, because that was one of the things that when you and I talked before, that I was saying that like that's taking a lot of time away from your ability to train. Is you have this gym and you're trying to run it. There's a lot of athletes now, especially fighters, that are going, well, the only way to make extra money because of the new or because the way the sponsorship dollars are coming in is to run a gym. I'll make money doing that, and then it becomes burdensome, becomes too much teaching and running this gym and trying to keep things together. You've stopped running the gym, but you still coach at the gym as well.
Yeah, I teach one class a week.
So it's way down from the last time we spoke then. Before it was, you know, quite a few. And then in the middle of training camp.
Yeah, I mean, it's progressively gone down. I mean, I have two gyms now, and I split time at both as far as training goes. And, you know, before scheduled class times, I go in and I won't say I run it, but I definitely oversee things and make sure everything's getting done. But, you know, during training times, I'm training. You know, there's nothing, once again, that goes back to setting your goals and your priorities. And, you know, when fight time comes up, that's my number one priority. And even when it's not, I don't ever miss scheduled training times, ever. It's just, it's something that's scheduled in. My wife knows, my family knows, the business knows. They just know, hey, when 10:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. roll around, James is training. That's just how it is.
Now, one of my highlights of my life was I did a show at in Mizzou, actually, at Deja Vu Comedy Club. Oh, yeah. And afterwards, these three college girls invited me back to their place, and I ended up banging all three of them. They just kind of jumped on me one at a time. I had one on my face while one was right. It was one of the greatest nights of my life. Have you experienced any of that being you're from Missouri?
I'm not sure how to answer that.
I think he's wondering, is all Missouri girls? Just
yeah, is that? I mean, that was one of the highlights of my life. I mean, you're a fighter in Missouri. You must have had some kind of stuff like that, no?
I definitely don't think that's an accurate assessment of Missouri's sexual encounters.
It's too bad. You just hurt their tourism.
Yeah.
Because I was about to buy a ticket, man. Like,
really? Come on. You're one of the best fighters in the world, and you're living in Missouri, and nothing. All right, but before the marriage, come on. No threesomes, no groupies. Come on, Krause. Give me something.
I wish I had some great stories to tell you, but unfortunately, I'm kind of a loner, man. I'm a homebody. I train and I sit at home. I don't do a lot, man. I'm money motivated, bro. I never have and never will worry about
how long, you know, you've been
females
married?
First, other than my wife, obviously. But before that, I've always just been money motivated. I could care less about any of that stuff.
How long have you been married?
How long have I been married? Yeah. A little over 3 years.
Do you think this really contributes to your ability to focus now and prepare for this fight?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Do you think being married really contributes to your ability to focus and prepare for this fight?
Oh. No, I don't think it changes anything. Like I said, I've always been an extremely motivated person. I'm money motivated. I'm very driven. Wife or single, I don't think it changes anything. I do, however, have a baby girl on the way that's due in May. I do think that will change things and make me even more driven.
Congratulations, absolutely, man.
Yeah, congrats.
I know that Frank's been married four times, and they've all been psychopaths. Do you have any advice for him, Frank? Yeah.
First, if you're going to be a comedian, I get the facts straight if I'm trying to pick on somebody. So, first, you want to get the facts straight.
How many times have you been married?
Three.
Okay, sorry. I was off by one.
Yeah, that's a major one. That's the big one. Fourth is.
I remember actually watching you train at Extreme Couture, and I remember seeing your wife with your baby. And your wife looked like she just came from the Rhino. She had blonde hair and these huge boobs and like a belly button ring. And I thought this is definitely a chick that you'd hook up with, not one you'd marry. Is that a fair assessment, Frank?
She'll make a good wife for somebody, not me.
All right, gotcha.
somebody not named Frank Trigg.
Definitely not anybody named Frank Trigg. Yeah. So the one thing I have to tell you about having kids and still competing is that the toughest thing is leaving them behind when you have to travel, like when you have to go away for train camp or going away for a fight. So what I did is that when I went to training camp, I would just FaceTime and. Well, I guess it wasn't FaceTime. They didn't have FaceTime yet, but it was like Skype. I would Skype all the time with them. And then I just made them come with me to the fights. So I'd always have the kids around me during the fights. But you have to be ready for, especially if they're, you know, if it's a newborn, you know, you're talking like, say you're fighting this weekend. Your baby's going to be born in May, hopefully May 7th, because that's a good day to have give birth to anybody, because it's my birthday.
Nice.
That then you're going to be fighting in September. They're going to be just months old. And you have to deal with the 4 a.m. wake-up call and the 4 a.m. So you have to weigh that out. Yeah, do I need to get sleep before a fight and be more relaxed, or do I need to have my child in the room with me so I feel more comfortable? So you have to kind of weigh that out, and every man's a little bit different. You know, I've talked to some guys who are like, fuck them, I don't like my kids, I'm going to be gone. You know, and they're gone, they're fight week, they just want to be an asshole and be fight week, you know, be a fighter, and then when they come home, they're like daddy daycare, and that's kind of what they do. Everybody's different.
Yeah.
The other thing you have to do is, I don't give a damn how much you trust any one of your other fighters. Do not let her around any one of their sons, because we're all assholes.
Thanks, Frank.
Period.
Now,
valuable advice. Dear Frank.
Dear Frank, I'm having a kid, and I now want to kill myself.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Kill every kid that's under 18, that's under 12
next
in the
week,
neighborhood.
Dear Frank.
Yeah, it's too late now. That ship sailed, so I'm in for the long haul now.
Now, James, who's this guy you're fighting?
I don't know a ton about him. I mean, Lazaro? I take that back. I know a lot about him. His name's Valmir Lazaro. He's 12-3, 9 knockouts, striker, pure striker, very little jiu-jitsu. You can't even find Valmir Lazaro in the term jiu-jitsu in the same sentence together. he's other than his loss to James Vick, he's never fought anybody with a winning record. So, you know, I think it makes for an exciting fight. But like I said, if you really compare fighter to fighter, you know, I just think I'm a far superior athlete, far superior fighter. I've fought way tougher people than this guy. I mean, if you just look at who I fought in UFC alone, it's in no comparison. You know, I fought way tougher guys than this dude. Every person I fought in the UFC will beat this dude to dust, and that's just a fact. So, I just have to go in and do my thing, and I have to play up to my skills and do what I know I can. And if that happens on Saturday, it's going to be an easy fight for me.
Look at this guy's record. Look at this guy's fight history. Do you kind of feel like, you know, a step down in competition for you a little bit? Because you fought some of the biggest names in the sport coming up, and now all of a sudden you've got a guy it's tough to find anything on, you know?
Is it a step down? Absolutely. But, these guys are hungry, you know, literally. You know what I mean? You definitely can't take anything away from anybody. It's, you know, at the sport of MMA. I mean, we've seen last night 10 underdogs in a row won. So, I can't take that. I can't let that go to my head. And I got to go in and just fight my game and fight my fight. And if I do that, you know, like I said, it should be open and closed for me.
Well, James, look, man, we're going to be rooting for you. I like you a lot. I think you're a great guy. And you did that military tour, right?
Yeah, man, that was one of the coolest experiences I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I actually helped set that up. So I was super happy that did that. I did a tour. They wanted fighters. Hey, I got James out there. He did a whole thing for the troops.
That's excellent.
Him and Shayna Baszler and Jessamine Duke and.
I'd love to do that again. That was awesome.
Absolutely, they're going to have more of those. And you're a great guy, and you're a great fighter, and you paid your dues. And you know it's an honor to watch you fight, and I can't wait for Saturday night, buddy.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for calling.
Best of luck to you, man. You have a great fight.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye. All right, that was James Krause. I like that guy.
You know, he was saying, though, this guy, no Brazilian jiu-jitsu, but I'm looking at what little information is here, and from skill breakdown, 33, like, it's an even breakdown between striking, submissions, and takedowns.
He's from Brazil. You have to assume that he's a black belt.
Yeah, right? I mean, it seems like I'm afraid he may be taking his ground game a little too lightly. That's, I mean, from what I'm seeing here and versus what he says, I mean, do you think that might be possible?
That's like assuming every Chinese guy is Jackie Chan.
And they are.
I'm assuming every Brazilian in the UFC has a good level of jiu-jitsu. No. It's not the same like saying...
You don't think so.
Come on, in the UFC? I'm not saying every Brazilian in general.
No, I understand. I hear you. I hear you trying to bail yourself out. I hear you trying to back up by that door. I hear you.
I hear it.
You know, it's still hit and miss. I mean, it's still there's a lot of guys out there that are great Brazilian fighters that aren't black belts in jiu-jitsu. It's what it is.
That aren't above purple belt.
Yeah, fighting.
Name some. I mean, just like, name three in the UFC.
How could I? They're not good at jiu-jitsu. How would I be able to name them? Why would I know them? Like, I don't know any of those guys.
But they're not fighting in the UFC.
No, there's guys. That's like saying everyone in the UFC has to be an amazing fighter. Well, it's not true.
Yeah, it is.
It isn't?
CM Punk. We can move on now.
No, it's not.
You said...
That's an aberration.
If they're in the UFC, then everybody has to be good. It's not true.
Everybody does have to be good in the UFC.
No,
fighting? Come on, man. You're talking... Joe Silva and Dana White and these guys are not going to sign people that aren't... I mean, look, there are certain guys that have better skills at certain levels. Cody McKenzie was a far better grappler than he was a striker. I mean, there are guys out there that are better strikers that, you know, Houston Alexander wasn't a submission specialist on the ground.
Right.
Okay, but they were a certain level of fighter to get there. I mean, except for maybe, I mean, the only guys that I would assume that you're talking about are the guys in the Ultimate Fighter China that where you see a guy who's 3-1 or 2-1 because they're going from that talent pool.
Edson Barboza doesn't have a black belt.
Edson Barboza. Okay.
Boom.
He is brown?
Purple.
I said purple
said,
or below.
Yeah. He did.
But thanks, Watson. Okay. So
close.
You got close. Yeah. All right.
You can talk as much as you want. Every fighter potentially can be on steroids because Anderson Silva failed, who is the cleanest guy that does everything best for the sport. So now all bets are off. Anybody can fail a drug test.
But that's
nobody. You do not have to be that good to be in the UFC anymore because they have an 0-0 CM Punk. Not 0-0 in the UFC. 0-0.
That's one guy.
Doesn't matter. Anderson Silva is one guy to fail a test.
Name five guys that are not good fighters that are in the UFC.
Well, shit. I was.
You were not a good fighter?
I wasn't that good when I was in there.
Come on, dude.
Look at my UFC record. It's 2-3. That's not a very good record in the UFC.
That doesn't mean you weren't a great fighter.
You said in the UFC. In the UFC, there's a ton of guys who are not that good.
I'm not saying their record in the UFC. I'm saying they're not. I'm talking about fighters in general.
Make up your mind, Adam.
No, you're just. You're
Make up your mind.
I'm
going off of what you're saying.
I'm going off of what you're saying. No, you're being funny. Come on.
I'm going off of what you're saying.
You can't get to the UFC.
Yes, you can't be. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm playing devil's advocate. You have to be a good fighter to get in the UFC, period. There's no way around it.
What was the point of making
that? And you have to be great all the way around.
I know why he's been divorced three times.
Because the anomaly. The one anomaly sets the rule for everything else. If you have one CM Punk, there's going to be another fucking, you know, Kid Inferno is going to show up all of a sudden. You got Glenn out there freaking running around.
Who's Kid Inferno?
God, he used to wrestle in TNA. You're going to have a Samoa Joe jump in. You have a John Cena jump in because they're big pay draws, but they guys can't fight.
If we come in here next week and this Lazaro won by submission, we're going to have
he might.
It'll be a whole nother conversation.
Hey, GSP is, and I'm going to get eaten up again, and everyone's going to start yelling at me and screaming at me. GSP was a horrible fucking wrestler. I could put him against he's a horrible wrestler. I could put him against our junior guy.
We're talking about MMA wrestling for wrestling.
No, I'm talking about pure wrestling, Adam. I'm about pure wrestling. Because the fans wanted him to go try out the Olympic team because he was so good in Canada. He couldn't beat one of our guys that was a junior, not even good enough to be on our world team.
What about the Canadian Olympics?
No, Canadians are good. The Canadians are good now. I know back when we were coming up. When we were coming up, the Canadians weren't that good. Now they're really good.
Was that they have different rules.
But listen, you talk about a guy that's not very good at wrestling shouldn't have any business doing it on a mat with anybody, but it's MMA. So a guy that's not good at wrestling, all of a sudden is amazingly good MMA, wrestling for MMA.
He
took everybody down.
He had amazing double leg takedowns.
He hit everybody with it anytime he wanted to. You can get a submission, you can be a guy that gets a series of submissions and not be a submission specialist because you have a great system for MMA. MMA is a separate entity unto itself. You can't go, this guy's a great submission guy, he must get all submissions. Now, does it happen a lot right now because it's still so new? Yes. Anderson Silva is an amazing submission guy. He doesn't submit that many guys because he knocks you out first.
Also a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
He's great. And he's an amazingly good submission guy. But he never saw it because he's knocking guys out. And that's my point, is that you don't have to be amazing at any one of these things and still be able to pull off a submission. Lazaro can pull off a submission this weekend over James Krause because he beats him up.
If he does, it means that he underestimated his ability to do that.
Yeah, do you think Gegard Mousasi is ever going to rear naked choke Mark Munoz, who's fighting this weekend?
Let's talk about...
Never going to happen.
Let's talk about a couple things. First of all, the fights last night.
Yeah.
There were some great fights last night. I liked the fact that 10 underdogs won. That was awesome.
Was it 10?
There's one guy that stood out to me.
Which guy is that?
That blew my mind. And that was Smiling Sam.
Yeah,
now,
Sam Melvie.
He's a guy who, he was losing that fight before the fight. He was kind of getting lit up a little bit. But he's got that power. I wanted to ask you about that. There are certain guys out there that have that one-punch power, Smiling Sam being one of them.
Yeah.
Can you teach power?
Yeah, you can teach power. And I saw that when you sent me the email today, I saw that. I was like, wow, yeah, this is brand new to me. Like, I didn't think you'd teach power before. Like, guys just have it, they don't. And then Arnold Chun, who trains Tyron Woodley and Emmanuel Newton, some other guys throughout, he has a system of how he teaches power where it's almost like you're shot putting. You have a weighted ball in your hand and you're throwing it for space and for time, but it's off your power hand and you do it and then you take it off and you have like weighted gloves and weighted vests. You take it all off and start throwing punches and what have you afterwards, and the power goes up. I've watched Woodley's power go up because of this training. You can teach power. I didn't believe it a year ago even.
Well, I remember.
I don't feel like he was taught power. I feel like he had, because look at him. And it just, I mean, when he walked to the ring, I was like, whoa, this is an accident. Somebody hired the wrong guy.
No, I knew. His last fight, he did the same thing.
But wow.
And he's got a great gimmick, smiling.
The smiling,
It's a great gimmick. He's got a great look. His wife is on America's Next Top Model. I think she might have won it. That hot redhead behind them.
Yeah.
That is his wife.
That's his wife.
We were like, is that his sister?
No, it looks like his sister a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I'm happy for the guy. He trains out of Team Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And, Team Quest has been on, it's a solid team, but lately they haven't been producing the best champions. They haven't really, but it's a great solid team. But it's just as of late, Dan Henderson is sort of on the decline a little bit.
Yep.
Tyrek Safardeen lost his last fight to Rory McDonald. He's a guy, he's been injured. A couple other guys over at Team Quest. It's just the one up on like Temecula. So I'm really happy because it seems like a good, solid bunch of guys with good training, and I want to see that team do better or do as good as it once was. Because at one point, now, did you train with those guys back in the day?
No. I had Henderson and Couture come on a team. We're on the Raw team at that point. I didn't even know because it was all so brand new. I didn't even know what the hell Team Quest was. Just a place that those guys trained at up top, up in the Northwest before they all left and moved, and Dan moved back to Temecula where he's from. Couture moved to LA a little bit and Vegas and was kind of bouncing around as he was trying to find his next spot to lay out. So it was like Quest was just another spot that a bunch of wrestlers was kind of hanging out. We didn't know it was actually a real fight team. It was kind of built together.
Yeah.
And they're whooping everybody's ass. It was amazing how good those guys were.
Yeah, they had Ellenberger. They had Chael at one point. Mm-hmm. They had, what's his name? Matt Lindland was over there, and Dan Henderson. It was just like rugged, Hector Lombard was over there for a little bit.
Yeah.
A bunch of rugged dudes and, you know, but good wrestlers. And I'm happy because I want to see those guys do well. So I'm happy for Sam Alvey.
Well, just as a matter of just looking at him in terms of his physical condition,
with this whole PED thing, I think you're going to see a lot of guys look like Sam Alvey now. I think the days of the guys who look like the Hector Lombards and these guys who I don't know if they're going to be over, because I think guys, it seems like every time they implement a new way to stop people from cheating, the cheaters are that much better.
You didn't listen to the whole meeting last week. They were talking about like 1% or, you know, 1.something% we're getting popped during in competition testing, which is the pre-fight test and the post-fight test done the day of competition, the day of the fight. And it was like 27, almost 30% were getting caught in out of competition testing. Yeah. That's where that's where they have to focus all their energy, and that's where they're focusing their energy. Yeah. So everybody now is like the from what I understand, if I remember correctly, I'm sure someone will correct it if I'm wrong, is that now everybody gets tested top to bottom, pre-fight, post-fight. So day of competition, yeah, Emma's getting tested top to bottom. And then the main event guys were all getting tested randomly out of competition. So like now those guys that were – and that's what I'm saying, is that you get caught once, you've gotten away with it a bunch of times before that because you just were better at, okay, I'm getting tested because, you know, fight night, I'm getting tested. Now you don't know because it's random.
Yeah.
All of a sudden now I'm signing for this fight. You're stuck at any
moment. Didn't the Pride guys – correct me if I'm wrong, but what I heard is that the Pride guys would get tested – but they wouldn't give you the results until you wanted to leave the organization. And then they would say, listen, just so you know, you failed 9 drug tests. And then you go, you know what? I'm actually going to stay in this organization.
That wasn't my – that never happened to me because I never tested hot for anything. But I heard that same rumor. But let's just remember, every single Pride guy that came over from Pride, he came over here to the UFC, and there was a transitional period. They all getting their asses kicked for a reason.
Because I mean,
drug testing was apparent. You're like, Jesus, like, I got to figure it out. Shogun, Vanderlei. I mean, everybody was getting their butts kicked. Was like,
and losing to the same guys they were beating over in Pride. I mean,
it wasn't like an easy – it wasn't like, oh, I just kind of stuck by a decision. It was like an ass-kicking beating, yeah, and then coming over here and taking an ass-kicking beating. Was like,
look, Vanderlei Rampage.
Totally different cat.
He almost murdered him over in Pride twice, yeah, and then you look at him over here, it was a different fight. Now, the Bigfoot Silva, there's a guy who I actually feel bad for because – let me hold on for a sec.
Yeah, I know.
Bigfoot Silva –
it's funny. We really got to get a camera here because when Greg gets amped, it's kind of funny. He's like a third grader that just learned a new word. It's like his uncle's like, go ahead, swear as much as
you want.
You
know what it is?
He's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God.
You know what it is? Is that I've known Greg for maybe about almost 15 years now. Yeah. MMA guys, comedians love talking, hearing themselves up, being funny. We don't get to talk about fighting that often because there are very few guys at the comedy club. If they do, is, hey, when's Kimbo coming back? Or something like that. So when you get people that talk to fighters, you can't wait to say, hey, oh my God, people actually know what I'm talking about.
Right.
But then you have to realize that, like,
I get excited.
I'm an excitable
guy no matter what. I'm this way at Starbucks.
Now, what I was saying about
the barista's like, fuck, here he comes.
coconut milk.
And it's actually Marina rolling her eyes behind the counter. Now, what I was saying is that Bigfoot Silva, from what I read about him, I read a bunch of articles about him before, he actually has a condition where he actually needs to take steroids to live. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because he has giganticism. So every fight he gets popped for the stuff that he actually needs to take. So now he's not able to take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And since then, he's just been getting knocked the fuck out by Arlovsky, by Frank Mir. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of unfortunate because the one guy who you could say, this guy needs it, is not allowed to take it.
Well, there's always that loophole. There's always that protocol. But at the very beginning, when you're trying to stop it, like what we're stuck at right now, and that's where baseball was when they came up, where football was when they came up, like when they all started enacting these new PED testing, that everybody's just ass out. Too bad. You need it to live. So what? It's too bad. But in like 5-6 years, when they finally get everything under control and get it screwed, they'll start being loopholes, start jumping back in again. You know, like guys in baseball now, if you have to take a long series of tests, you have to prove it, but you can take Adderall for your ADD. If you prove it, you have ADD, but it's a long series of tests. It's a protocol, but you have to go through it because they found out, you know, and of course they have a union, so it works a little bit quicker.
And then when they approve you, you can just crush it up and snort it right there. Now, I've been approved. Doctor's orders.
I'm surprised they can sit through the test on Adderall. Now you've been on TRT for 3 years?
3 years, yeah. This month is 3 years.
Now,
yeah,
how
yeah.
has it changed your life?
It's given me 10 years. 10 years.
What do you mean, giving you 10 years?
Like, I'm 32 years old again. I'm 42 right now. I'm really 32. My numbers are up. My lifts are up. My arthritis is down. My kind of thinking is back up. Like, everything. When I went off and I stopped fighting in September, that next January, I went out to Hawaii. I was seeing a buddy of mine, Greg Honda. If you've ever seen the photo of Robbie Lawler punching me in the face and the blood splatting everywhere and my nose splits open.
Yeah.
That photo was taken by Greg Honda. He's been a close friend of mine for a long time. Except even, that, it's funny because on his business card is that picture.
Oh, my
so
God.
So it's like, it's fucking great.
It's
yeah, I know.
You're
yeah.
getting your nose yeah. broken.
It's me dying. It's, yeah. me, it's me starting to kill myself. So there, but Greg and I are real close friends. He brought me out and said, hey, there's this group out here. You really need to sit down and talk to him. I met this doctor, Charles Arakaki. Started talking to him. He's like, you're part of the protocol. The reason why, like, if you're in a hard contact sport where there's head trauma involved, football, taekwondo, judo, boxing, you know, really Big Ten style of wrestling, those guys headbutt all the time, like guys like that, they're going to have problems later. That's why if you look at football players, they were dying. Like at 55, yeah. 60 yeah. years old, they're dead after retiring. And they retired at like 28, 29, like they're done playing football. They've had 3 years in the pros and they're wrecked. Absolutely fucking right. We lost Reggie White. I mean, and his was sleep apnea because those guys at 100,000% or 0%. So I'm either working out and training all the time. I'm not doing anything. His guys were falling apart. Testosterone levels were falling way off due to head trauma. So they started doing protocol. I went in and I will be on it for the rest of my life. But I also have stated before, I will never fight on it. And that's when I started doing it. I was like, I'm done fighting because.
So your sex drive's up again?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is up. You know, it's literally a 10 year.
So you think I should take this stuff or what?
Are you over 30?
Yeah.
Yeah. You should at least know your numbers. Like my when I got tested.
Where do you get your numbers taken?
My lowest, you're supposed to be, the ratio is between 350 and 1190, essentially, 1200. I was at 105 when I took my first test. I thought it was a gimmick. They were like just trying to prove, hey, look, you know, here we'll.
No, where do you get this test done?
I got it. I was 95.
No, where could I get this done?
I go to Universal Men's Clinic. Cause that's the only guys. That's the only guys I know. I trust them. They have offices obviously in Honolulu, but also in Portland, Seattle,
but these are
Oklahoma City.
Treatments?
It's a shot. You take a testosterone
and,
shot.
And how much does it cost to get your testosterone taken?
The test, the blood work is whatever the blood work is. It could be $400 or $500 if you want to pay cash, but usually it's just insurance running it. And then after that, most of these places don't do insurance. The men's life clinic and life and longevity clinics, and it's usually about, you know, it could be anywhere. I've seen some guys paying $800-$900 a month for it. You know,
what are you paying like for?
It's $250.
You're paying $250 a month.
Yeah, including doctor's visits. That's including the doctor's
increased
visit.
Increased testosterone levels do also contribute to hair loss, though.
No,
only, see, you're one of those guys that read the wrong study.
No, it's true.
Yes, no, it's not true. It's false. It's 100% false. A 25-year study that they finished 2 years ago that I looked at, and what it is that the guys that get hair loss is because they put their numbers over 1,500. You don't want to be over 1,500. You only need to be around 1,000 to 1,100 or 1,200. You want to be any higher than that.
So if you fight CM Punk, if Dana's, then you have to go off TRT.
I'd have to come off TRT, yeah. And so then, I'd have to have, like, if they go, look, we want you to fight CM Punk, you get a fight, I'm like, okay, I need 12 weeks. And he's like, why 12 weeks? Because I need 6 weeks to come off to adjust my testosterone level so that they're even again.
So the fight last night between Frank Mir and Bigfoot Silva. Do you think, now you train with Mir a lot, right?
I did. Well, no, I didn't have trained with him. I just knew him. At the time, my wife and his wife are close friends. They're still close friends. I lost Frank in the divorce.
So oh, really?
Yeah, right.
So you and Mir, you guys aren't friends again?
We're friends. I mean, we say hi, whatever. But remember, if your wife is like, I don't want you talking to that asshole. Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm not that asshole.
So, I mean, now was it does Mir look that good or did Bigfoot's chin look that bad?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. Frank got yelled at quite a bit.
Frank, I mean, I got to give it to Frank. The guy's a gamer.
Is he a gamer? I mean, his last fight, who did he fight? The last time, he got destroyed by Dos Santos. That was a fight Overeem. He lost to Overeem, right? He got beat pretty bad by Overeem. I mean.
Overeem, Dos Santos, Cormier. One more.
He was on a three-fight losing streak.
He's on a three-fight losing streak.
No, four-fight losing streak.
I thought it was four.
Four-fight losing streak. And if he lost this one, he'd have been out.
Yeah.
So a little bit is, Mir was like, I'm going to be losing my money wagon that I've had for...
Oh, Barnett. Barnett.
Yep.
Barnett. So, I mean, did Mir look that good, or he just sort of did...
I think Mir's Bigfoot looked that bad. He didn't look healthy the second he walked in the ring.
I think it's a little bit of both. Bigfoot's off because he can't take the stuff he needs to survive. And then it's also, too, that Mir had his back against the wall. He's like, he's under pressure. He's got kids. He's got a wife. He's got a lavish lifestyle. Not super lavish, but he's got a lavish lifestyle. He needs to take care of a house and cars.
He's also insane. Like, I worked with Mir on the MMA Awards. And he's a nice guy. A real smart guy. Quiet guy.
Overly smart. That's the problem. He's almost too smart for his own good.
Really smart guy.
Super smart.
But it was after the Brock Lesnar fight. And he kind of went insane. And you can't blame him. Like, competitive as he is, when in the UFC 100, when Brock put him in a schoolyard headlock and just pounded the shit out of him to the point
for a long time.
I mean, Frank, after that, he gained like 60 pounds of muscle, which was kind of strange for the 36-year-old guy, to, or however old he was, 32, to gain 30.
It could happen.
Really? I mean, when have you ever seen anything like that happen?
Very convincing. You know, I've seen it happen, never naturally, though.
Yeah, right. So he sort of all of a sudden had this new figure. But I remember him walking on the MMA Awards. He had a knife around his neck.
What?
And a gun in his back pocket to shoot a sketch at the Hard Rock, and I'm like, this dude has lost it. Like, we're not in the Wild West. We're at the Hard Rock in Vegas. Yeah. I mean, you'd have to be insane to even approach Frank Mir. The guy is a huge guy, and then to have a knife and a gun.
He's been armed since he's was 18 or 19 years old. He's had a concealed weapons permit in Nevada since he's like 21, 22.
Yeah.
He's always armed. It's like when he got caught for having two 9mm shells in his bag, I'm like, trust me, that he forgot those. He really did forget those, because if he really was bringing a weapon, he doesn't just bring like one magazine full of ammunition. He brings thousands of rounds to go shoot out in the desert. Like, this is he's a gun guy. Yeah. He's a survivalist. This is what he does.
Right. Yeah. He's ready to take on the government in an apocalypse.
It is legitimately scary. You call, text, yell a bullhorn, throw firecrackers at the house. You let him know you are coming before you ring the doorbell. He is one of those guys that is, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, why are you in my doorbell? I just want to get a drink, Franklin's hanging out. No, you don't play that game.
You know, he was a bouncer at the Rhino.
Yeah.
Now, while he was the UFC champion.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's, let me just tell you something. That's how the money was back then.
Yeah.
He had to keep the job to stay alive.
Yeah. Now, is there anybody other sport, though, that you could see, like, oh, that guy plays for the Lakers, and he's also working at the Rhino?
By the way, here's the ticket for my car.
Can I get an autograph?
Well, that was the Clippers up until about two seasons.
That's what Frazier Smith says, joke about that.
What time can he get here?
Oh, you fucked my joke, man.
Oh, sorry.
I was about to tell a joke, and then you just said the punchline.
I thought we were just going right for the punchline. I went right for the submission.
I didn't say the setup. So he called the Clipper game. Frazier Smith, he goes, hey, what time's the game? The guy goes, well, what time could you get here? That's the joke. But Greg, anyway, the joke's over. So
it wasn't that good anyway. It's fine.
It was a good. It was a much better joke. All right, 180. Now the fight this weekend. We're gonna talk about the fights this weekend.
Yes.
At the Staples Center, Ronda Rousey versus Kat Zingano. According to Ronda's trainer Edmund, Ronda can beat Holly Holm in a boxing match.
Complete bullshit. Edmund is a complete fucking insane retard. If he really believes that, no fucking way in hell. Not possible. Not possible. That's like saying, because I did 2 years of judo, I can now beat Ronda Rousey in a judo match. Not possible.
You can beat her now?
I can be Ronda. I have a come on, I'm a man, damn it. Like, so I'm 75
you
pounds.
You heard it here first. The first intergender bender is coming up.
I'm 75 pounds heavier than she is. There's no way she can do anything to me.
He's also a black belt in judo. But as far as being Holly,
there's no way, because Holly's got rounds. She has time. She's been in that pressure. She's been under that stoom. She's gone 12 rounds before. She knows the feel.
She's also 36-1 and an 18-time world champion boxer.
Like, this is not Edmund might be selling a fight. I don't think Edmund really believes that. So no disrespect to Edmund or other.
Really, you don't think he believes that?
Mob after me. No, he can't. He can't. There's no way in hell. He's trying to sell a fight. He's trying to sell his product. Trying to sell.
But he's never actually been with Holly Holm watched her box.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
So maybe he probably does believe it. He just does.
If he does, then he needs to stop and rethink his life. Really, he needs to not go to the gym for a couple of days. Like, after a round of fights on Saturday, it's like, look, I'm taking off a month because I'm completely retarded. That makes no sense. I mean, that is legitimately, to anybody that knows anything about how sports really work, is completely retarded. That's like Michael Jordan seriously thinking he was going to make Major League Baseball.
Right.
Yeah.
That is completely retarded. It does not.
I think
it
he did think that.
Make any sense.
He really did.
If he does, he needs to take some time off. He really needs to go get himself.
All right.
Out.
So, now Kat versus Ronda. You know what?
Evan, what's the over-under on Armenia Mob coming up shooting me in about two and a half weeks from now?
No, Kat versus Ronda, I think is actually a very dangerous fight for Ronda.
It is very dangerous.
Here's why. Because Ronda Rousey, her last fight was 16 seconds. Mm-hmm. The fight before that with Sarah, it was a one round. She's with a trainer who's primarily a boxing trainer, who's telling her things like, you can beat Holly Holm in a boxing match. And I think I think Ronda's going to win. But I think that Ronda has not been 5 rounds ever. And she's with a girl who is a tough girl who has been three rounds. She's been in wars. Her last fight with Nunez was a tough fight. She lost the first round. Her fight with Miesha Tate was a battle. She lost her husband. Her ex-husband committed suicide. She had a year off because she fucking broke up both her knees or something. Yeah. I mean, she's with a girl who's experienced a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And Ronda Rousey right now is... this week she told Ariane, she said the ring girl shouldn't make more than us. She's on Conan O'Brien talking about her dating life. She's in the movie Entourage. She's in the new Fast and the Furious movie. She's in the new Hunger Games, they're saying. Someone said something about her having a sitcom. It just seems like if ever there was a time that this girl might be beatable, I want Ronda to win. I think Ronda's going to win. But there's a lot of flags coming up right now.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I will always bet against Ronda. I will always bet against her because the moment I change my mind and bet on her, be the first time she's gonna lose, and I don't fucking want to be the guy that, like, I'm super superstitious.
Yeah, yeah.
Super,
right. You don't want to be the guy that jinx.
I'm like, fuck, I'm going to jinx myself the rest of my life.
I'm the same way.
So I'll always bet against her.
If I bet on somebody, they're going to lose.
You know, and that's how and I started that with Couture because I started like, oh, no. I started like, you know, betting for him, and I was like, fuck.
Yeah.
God. So I bet against, every time I bet against him, he fucking won. So
I think the bigger question is who's going to win the
evening?
Here's the deal with Kat. It's the first time Ronda's going to face somebody that can deal with the amount of pain that she can dish out, and can dish out just as much pain as that Ronda can take. So it's the first time she's going to be battling somebody that can take a lot of heat and give a lot of heat, and Ronda hasn't been there before. She's usually the person that beats the crap out of you because she's just harder than you are. She's just more physical and wants it more and has more desire. No one wants it more than Kat does, and Ron and Kat are in the same atmosphere at that level. If she tries to stand there and box her and start trying to make it a stand-up game, she's going to get cracked because this is Kat's specialty. She's going to beat the crap out of her. If she doesn't get on top of her and really, really buckle down and look for a severe, like, I got to break this girl's arm. She's like, get it in her head. That just going for the tap and looking up at Herb Dean or Big Jim McCarthy, whoever has the assignment, looks up at him, hoping for them to stop it. They're not going to stop it because Kat will not tap. She's going to keep coming. And if you let her out of a tough position like that one time, her momentum's going to keep coming. And she is a tough girl that has no quit in her. It makes her extremely dangerous because the reason why Ronda was able to beat Miesha the second time, even though Miesha was more prepared, you saw the finish on that armbar. It really wasn't an armbar. Her leg wasn't even over her head. Miesha could have just sat up to get out of it, but she broke her. She stole her will. She can't steal Kat's will.
The only thing about Kat that I think, Kat is a slow starter.
Very slow.
She lost the first round to Nunez. She lost her first round to Tate. Mm-hmm. And if she starts slow against Ronda, this fight's over.
Yeah,
and Ronda is a big, strong girl. I mean, Ellenberger said that she take him down in practice a couple times. Mm-hmm. We're talking about a 170 guy who walks around at 190, who's a top five guy in the UFC. This is a 135 pound girl beating him up.
Yeah.
So now, speaking of Ellenberger, you've been training with him?
Yeah. He was over at Strong Sports doing some training with us at Strong Sports Gym downtown L.A. with our buddy Torin. And Jake's biggest thing is not physical. His biggest thing is first of all, getting all the voices out of his ears. He has too many people telling him what to do and how to do things, and he needs to just take control. That's one. Two is being confident again and being the juggernaut is okay. There's so many people telling him, oh, you need to back off. You get tired going in the third round, and you spend too much energy in the first and second round, so you would back off and wouldn't ever get into it because he's like nervous of getting tired and being too tired if you need it later in the fight.
Right.
You're called the juggernaut because you are absolutely fucking insane. Be insane. Go out there and be that insane guy and go crazy. Just getting him confidence up.
Have you told him this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so you're one of his coaches for this fight?
No. I was just a guy that has a similar background, is sitting around talking. I don't have any desire to coach anybody because I can't handle that kind of stress.
Wow. Like,
yeah.
I was about to say, why aren't you coaching?
Yeah, being in somebody's corner and trying to have it because you're vested. Like, you're a coach. You are a trainer, a coach, a mentor, a best friend, an ass-wiper.
Weren't you Nick Nolte's son's coach?
Nicolas Cage's son.
Nicolas Cage's son?
Yeah, in wrestling in high school. Yeah.
Nicolas Cage's son wanted to wrestle.
Yeah.
And he went to Beverly Hills High School.
Yep.
And they didn't have a team. So Nicolas Cage funded the entire team and hired Frank Trigg, a UFC star, to be the coach.
Yeah,
now, how long did you coach this team for?
Two seasons, and I moved to Vegas.
How'd it go?
Good. Yeah, Weston got good. He's athletic. He's strong. It's kind of weird. Like, you wouldn't think so, but it's weird. Beverly Hills High School's got a weird dichotomy. Like, I'd have, like, the kid that had eggs and filet mignon for breakfast that morning in practice, you know, at 3:30, and then the kid that hasn't eaten in 3 days because his dad hasn't made enough landscaping, you know, landscaping jobs to pay enough to put food on the table.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is Beverly Hills. How is this possible? But that's the nature of Beverly Hills. It's just how it works. You have the landscaper's kid going to school with the multimillionaire's kid. They got like one of the kid's cousins invented spinners. Like this, like on cars, like their cousin invented spinners. You're like, what? He's like, yeah, my cousin invented spinners. Like, and he's like, and we laugh at him. Like, he's a multimillionaire because he's like, yeah, we laugh at him. Like, he's low beneath us. Like, what's your dad do? He imports carpets from Israel. Like, what the? I don't understand it. Like, it's a
that's
whole thing.
That's pretty badass. Like, Nicolas Cage is like, I want my son to have a wrestling team.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's very Hollywood, right? That is incredibly Hollywood. Well, then we'll just invent a team. I'm going to hire Frank Drake. Come It's going to be amazing.
It was cool. It was fun to, you know, I got to sit and talk with Nicholas and Christina Fulton, the ex-wife, and, you know, the head of the whole thing. And you get to sit around and handle him and talk to him. And then all of a sudden, Nick is like, he's like, so how do you think I can do, you know, what do you think I can do to make Weston better? I go, be harder on him. Like, be tougher on him. Like, you're too nice to him. Like, he gets away with everything. Like, stop it. Like, yell at him a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he's like, yeah, maybe I should. Like, no, you're not going to. You're too nice a guy. Like, you're too nice a guy. You're not going to yell at him.
All right. So Raquel Pennington, Holly Holm.
Yeah,
now,
tough fight.
Holly Holm, I've been waiting for her arrival to the UFC for a long time. I know Mike Winklejohn was her trainer back in the day. And Winklejohn is, I think, a very underappreciated coach. And you hear Greg Jackson's name, but you don't really hear Winklejohn as much.
Because it sounds dirty.
Maybe that's it. But he's been really high.
I showed her my Winklejohn.
Come here, honey. Want some candy and some Winklejohn?
And there's a whole movement of people that really think
the
movement of people that really think that Holly Holm is the girl.
I love how Adam's just trying to keep this on track. We're like, fuck you.
I'm gonna get in trouble again.
No, you're not. You're not gonna get in trouble. Now, is Holly Holm the girl? I mean, I think Raquel Pennington's a girl kind of tailor made for Holm because she doesn't have much. From what I see, her wrestling isn't really her strong suit. Mm-hmm. I mean, she won her last fight via bulldog choke, which, I mean, unless you're Carlos Newton, Matt Hughes, Carlos, right?
No, Pat Miltich.
Pat Miltich.
Carlos Newton, yeah.
Carlos Newton.
That's the last time you saw that.
That's the last time I saw the bulldog choke in the UFC. I mean, she hit Ashley Evans, a college wrestler, who I think herself was surprised she got bulldog choked. But I think Holly Holm is just going to control this on the feet and light it up.
I think so, too. That's kind of how I see this fight breaking down. But I see that if Pennington decides, like, she gets scared at some point or gets angry or needs to, like, I got to prove a point right now, and she gets in there and takes Holly down, I think it's going to be a little bit different of a game. You'll see Holly probably get back up to her feet. She's got pretty good movement once she's on her back, but I don't think she's not going to try and lay there and stay there. If Raquel can hold her there, it makes things a little bit more difficult, and then we can see a definite change. But Holly's just one of those girls that understands. Like I said, she had a lot of rounds in boxing. What did you say? Like 36
she,
and
she
one.
She was 36-1 as a boxer.
Yeah,
and
that's impressive.
18-time world champion boxer. But I mean, I'm not saying her division was weak, but the women's boxing she was in, wasn't. I mean, there wasn't that level. It wasn't like she beat Leila Ali and this other one. Yeah, I mean, it just didn't. It was a tough division. Boxing is tough, but it just didn't. It seemed like there was a reason she left boxing to go to women's MMA.
There's no money.
Exactly.
It's the same training sequence. The same. You know, it's just as hard to train for, but there's no money in it.
I'm just hoping the fight lasts long enough for me to finish.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you. Now, all right. So we're going
Frank,
one more fight.
And then we'll cut right now.
All right.
Frank hates it. When
Evan's angry. All right. So now, the fight that I think the couple fights that I think are going to be really good. One of the main fights is what's his name? Ferguson. Right. Tony Ferguson is fighting. Who's Tony Ferguson fighting? He's fighting someone really good.
Gleison Tibau.
Tibau, who looks like he's about three weight classes heavier.
Yeah, that guy's a monster.
And so is Ferguson. Ferguson beat Abel Trujillo. I did not see that coming. He's been on a tear. Frank, I'm picking Ferguson. I think Tibau. I think he breaks a little bit. He's a big guy, kind of a bully of a fighter. Mm-hmm. But I think that if you stand up to him,
Ferguson's not gonna get bullied.
Yeah,
you're gonna bully him around. That's one of his attributes. One of his best things. Like you can't really push him around. He's gonna be in the game the entire time. Like you think, oh, I'm beating this guy's butt for a while, but all of a sudden, like I can't really put him away. I can't get him to get off me. With against a guy like Tibau, who is a bully and fights well as a bully, if you don't let him bully you, he doesn't have much else. He kind of can't. He can't get going. Can't get his rhythm and his pattern going. I actually kind of picked Ferguson in this one too. But what's the line? I haven't seen any. I haven't looked at any lines on this thing, so I'm wondering how they picked it. Because I would think that Tebow would be the favorite in this one, just because of a former reputation. But I really.
But after the PED ban, I don't know how. I don't know about. I'm not saying Tebow is on PEDs, but if you look, but if you go out of the PED look at you test,
yeah,
that is a fucking big dude. Now. Koscheck, Ellenberger.
So who do you
want to pick? Man, this one is tough for me because, you know, Ellenberger is really working diligently, and Koscheck's kind of at the end. He's had a lot of great fights, had a long storied career, doesn't really fight that much anymore. You know, he's got his AKA Dethrone Fresno camp that he runs now, and left AKA, you know, to move back to Fresno because he didn't get along with, I think, Javier Mendez. He wasn't getting along with him, and that's why they split, whatever. But this one is a tough one for me, but I have to lean towards Ellenberger, not because he trains over at Strong Sports, so I saw him every Tuesday and Thursday. It's because he's just a little bit younger, a little bit more hungry, and not doing very well in his career right now, and wants to prove that he's still game and can be back in the limelight.
If Jake throws the way he used to throw punches, which actually I think has worse form for boxing but better for MMA, and he clips Koscheck, the fight's over. Koscheck has been... getting knocked out by Woodley. I didn't think he was getting up on that. He had his eyes roll back a bunch of times. He also got knocked out by Robbie Lawler. And Ellenberger, while he got stopped by Lawler, just sort of got broken. He hasn't really been knocked out. I don't think he's ever been knocked out. I just feel like it just seems like Koscheck's a little punchy, and he parties a lot. Josh.
Oh, is that right?
I see him in Vegas a lot.
Well, he's not my favorite.
So, all right. Well, listen, that's our show. Where can people find you, Frank Trigg?
Yes, Frank Trigg, everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, everything but Foursquare, I think, is the only thing I'm not on. but it's all at Frank Trigg, one word. That's all me.
Greg?
At the Greg Wilson or thegregwilson.com.
Yes. And you can find me at MMA Roasted or adamhunter.com. Or at Adam Comedian. I will be headlining in Reno all this week at Catch a Rising Star in Reno. The following week, I'm in Rochester, yep. New York, in
Frank
Webster. I will see Frank's son. And then I got a bunch of stuff coming up. I'm in South Carolina coming up. I got a bunch of dates. I'm in Iowa, Dubuque, Iowa.
Are you actually making money now? Are you actually?
I do all right.
You're not making $50 a session.
No, yeah. Not $50 a session. I do well enough to the point where I could coach wrestling and love it.
There you go.
So it's like so,
good for you.
So that's cool.
Good for you living a dream.
Yes.
Your parents must be proud.
They are. They are.
The one he knows about. Yeah.
Yeah. People. Thank you guys for fucking shitting on my schedule. Thank you, Evan the Beard. Thank you, Fox Sports. Guys, take care. Thank everyone for coming on the show. Bye-bye.